kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We have an awesome show lined up for you today. And joining me to start things off, Pernell Vaughn, how are you doing?
I am tired like scratch with a scratchy voice. I went to a barcade yesterday and I did not expect to actually stay as long as I did or drink as much as I drank. And well, now I'm drinking herbal tea first thing in the morning.
Are you hungover?
No, not hungover. Just scratchy voice from all like the yelling and stuff.
I made a little hungover.
Not even little. I made a solemn vow. I'm never getting hungover again. That mess is no joke. And the older you get, the more brutal it is. I don't need my brain bouncing around in my scalp right now. It's just not worth it. It's not worth it.
Very true. We're not alone, though.
Oh, I thought we were alone now.
No,
we
are being joined by the one and the only Mustin. How are you doing?
Ooh. It's just Mustin, actually.
Crap, now I gotta change my book information.
So how are you doing today, Mustin?
I'm pretty hungry and I'm trapped in the closet, so it's a weird day.
You were here to talk about your brand new album that is releasing in 2 weeks called The World Is Square. For the people who don't know what this album is about, give us the rundown.
I've been working on this album for a very long time. I think I finished the first track in 2003, and I've been trying to finish a collection of music since then, but unlike all of my other projects, I didn't have a deadline, and so there was no real accountability, and I was not able to focus on it. And so I asked Jason Napolitano at Scarlet Moon Records if he would be the executive producer for it. And he said, yeah. So that gave me the kick in the pants, I guess, I needed to be able to focus and finish it. And now I have an album. It is only 8 tracks, but it is over 40 minutes long. So I think that's a pretty good get.
It is 40 minutes. I didn't even notice that. 40 minutes and 25 seconds. That's a hell of an album for just 8 songs.
Yeah, one of my favorite albums of all time is Steely Dan's Asia, and that's only 7 tracks, but I think it's like 42 or 43 minutes.
An Opeth album that has like 6 songs and it's an hour and a half.
Yeah, that's more of like, that's not my... I do like Opeth, but I can't go on that long. Ask my wife.
There's something also to be said about like the fact that, you know, it's only 8 tracks or so, but honestly, I just feel like a plentiful number of tracks in and of itself, and they're quality tracks too. So you don't have any filler floating around in there just to pad the length of the album.
Yeah, I try to be conscious of that, though. I do have some tags on this album. Anybody that really follows me and knows me knows that I hate fade outs, but I actually did musical tags on these, which is where the tune actually ends, but then at the very end you wait for a second and then another part starts and it's related to the tune, but it's not exactly the same. And so I did some of those, and those do fade out because that's kind of the nature of those tags. Do y'all know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I was kind of wondering, I know that you are an enemy of fade outs, and I was wondering why there were a couple on the album, so I'm glad that you explained that.
Yeah, so for those playing along at home, there's some songs, like if you know the song In the Meantime by Space Hog, or Battle Flag by the Low Fidelity All-Stars, or Hold Me, Kill Me, Kiss Me, Throw Me by U2. But one of my favorite ones is SEXXY from They Might Be Giants, which just ends their cool, sexy R&B song with this very weird string quartet that is completely unrelated. It's just really cool. So I don't know why I got into tags so hard with this album, because I've never really done them before.
And sometimes it's just a matter of you feel a need, you know, like it's like, this is so perfect, but it's missing something. And you're like, oh, this puts
I think that's it. The grooves were so good that I just didn't want them to stop. So I had to keep it going.
And that's all it takes, man.
There you go. I sent you a picture of my closet. I told you I'm in the closet.
Now I got to look at this.
That is a swank closet, though. So first of all, we got to cover this. So he said he's in his closet. This is where he's recording. He is not lying. He's definitely in there. And you see bits of his wardrobe, of course, because he's inside of his closet. Every article of clothing in this thing is dapper swank. Like, there's no room for, like, a T-shirt. No, like, Eat It Joe's or these burritos or Faraga or whatever stuff you might think might be on a shirt. Now, this is all quality materials, man. This is slick.
The only problem is I'm trapped in here.
Yeah, but you're trapped with so many awesome clothes. I mean, you have variety now.
Yeah.
When someone opens the door and lets you out, you'll be dressed to impress.
Yes, I am looking forward to that day. So I am trapped in the closet until who knows when. And at that time is when the podcast will end, at least.
It's like 40 minutes or so. That's not that bad.
Okay.
By the way, I think I'm going to end up using that picture as the picture for the episode on YouTube.
Tremendous.
So people could see what your closet looks like.
Great.
The swankest of closets.
What kind of fun stuff are you doing on your computer in the closet?
Talking to two boys on the internet.
Hey, ooh. Hey, I'm a man.
Oh, they said they were boys. Uh-oh.
I have a seat over there, sir. Hey, is it my fault that young men have a passion for quality music? If so, then lock him up.
Dapper clothes and music.
Yeah, those are quality items, though, you gotta say. So I'm a bit curious here. So I know, like, you're obviously, I've known you for years as being an extremely musically talented man. Now, but I can't recall off the top of my head, so it might be good for the listeners to learn this. How many instruments would you say you generally are, like, you're at least, like, proficient at utilizing?
Proficient? Zero. ones that I know the notes and how to do them. I don't know. Several. I do all keyboards. I do guitars and basses. So I was recording this neat idea I had for Ken's theme from Street Fighter II. Mm-hmm. And I think I had out my keyboards just a couple of days ago. Let me picture what's out there since I'm trapped in the closet.
Just crack the door open.
Keyboards and electric guitar, electric bass, alto sax, some percussion stuff. So I don't know. I can piddle on pretty much anything. I did a Super Mario 3 arrangement, La Samba de Agua, that has me playing a bunch of stuff, bass, clarinet, flute, trumpet, alto sax, guitars. I can piddle on pretty much anything. I'm always impressed by how much air it takes to play the flute versus the amount of air it would take to play like the tuba. I don't get so lightheaded playing the tuba, but the flute really wears me out. I think I'm doing it wrong. Yeah, because it doesn't go anywhere. The tuba, it's all going one place, but with the flute, it's just going over and out.
So given the amount of, like, you know, air, you know, airspace for it to travel through, in between the tuba and the flute, do you put equal amounts of energy into blowing each instrument?
Maybe people do, but I've never been trained. I would skip class in high school and just go down to the high school band room and just grab some of the alcohol spray and this book called The Technique of Orchestration, and I would go around and just open up people's cases and get out their instruments and just learn how to play them. I use the alcohol spray.
I gotta swear now that how the image that you just gave me is hysterical, because I just pictured a guy like a bandit mask in a music room, throw a rock to see if anybody hears it. Like, coast is clear. Come on, I got 10 minutes. It's like, by the closet or the music room too, so you can play in there. And I'm like, here.
That's right. So that I'm just hanging out there.
What's that spray for? The alcohol spray. What does that do?
It's a sanitizer because these instruments go on your mouth, and you know your mouth is a very intimate, dirty place. And so when I would go and get out my friend's clarinet, I would try to get instruments of people that I actually knew. when I got my friend's clarinet out and would, you know, tinker on it, I would use the alcohol spray to spray his reed and mouthpiece so I wasn't making out with him.
Gotcha.
Well, I got glad you didn't tinkle on it. So that is a good thing.
Yeah.
Yes, because that'd be really bad. Now, did the friends actually, like, did any of them know you were doing it? I'm hoping they at least knew that sometimes Mustard would just pop up and play a few notes.
I think so. I've got a really bad memory. I don't know what my deal is. I must have got dropped a lot as a child or something. I still think about, like, Joe, do you remember, like, I got into an elevator with you and my wife, and I didn't recognize you, and you've been my friend for, like, 40 years.
Yeah, it's been a long time. I don't remember getting in the elevator, though. When was this?
I don't remember, but I just know that, and my wife brings it up. She's like, she just randomly will be having dinner, and she looks at me, and she's like, how could you forget who Joe Kim? Like, how did that happen? I'm like, baby, I don't know. It's nothing personal. I just got the dumbs. I have the dumb.
When two people with poor memories are trying to recall a situation, that's pretty solid.
Dude, I know the feeling. My memory's been failing me as well. I think we're just getting older and we're getting dumber.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's a quirk. There's a bit of a perk to that, too, sometimes, because you'll occasionally have, like, a bizarre flash of a memory that you thought was lost, and you'll just get ecstatic about it to the point where you start calling people, like, dude, I just remember this thing we did, like, in 2006. Remember that time? You know, we had those weird smoothies, and you thought it'd be a good idea to throw, like, a pork chop in it to see if it would change and enhance the flavor. You know, it was a good idea at the time.
It does sound like a good idea.
So now you got to do it. You see, I planted that idea. Now it has to be, you know, brought to fruition. Because if you don't, I don't know
what to say. Yeah, I think savory smoothies are missing from the smoothie world. That's for sure. I need to get more pork chop and possibly mashed potato in there.
Oh, yeah.
Got to add some gravy for the smoothiness.
Oh, this is all upsetting. We're making baby food.
No. First of all, let's get something straight here. Babies, at least in that regard, have it good. I don't know what happened to us as adults, or we started to realize, no, you can't have food this way. Everything for them is like, you know, just gum-based or gelatinized or just liquefied. Why not just introduce that to the adult world? Just imagine, you know, you're a little tired, your jaw's been just aching from all the food you've been eating throughout the day. You just want to relax. You want a beverage, but you also want something savory. Savory drinks, you know? I think that's a quality concept. Just take a fried catfish and put it in a blender, smoothify that thing up, maybe come up with maybe like a good like yogurt, like a bland yogurt just to give it a thickness liquid. You just drink your fried catfish. I mean, has no one else thought of this? I mean, it's an idea just waiting to be utilized.
The logic is so easy to follow, but it's still really bumming me out.
And just imagine also you might come up with a cool combination of things you didn't think you'd even want to eat. You can put an entire meal in one beverage. One meal.
Oh, man.
What is wrong with us?
Ribeye.
Really wonky shit.
Chicken or ribeye, put them both in the blender.
Yeah.
Both for dinner. No one has to know.
See, but if we're adults, so we got to just get the pre-made stuff. I don't want to go through the trouble and the effort of actually like blending stuff on my own. I just want to go to the store and buy a jar of man food.
Yeah, it's Gerber easy, adult food.
Now, see, the problem isn't that we have to do it. It's the fact we got to clean up after we're done making it. So I propose that you get a blender, you mix all the stuff, drink the beverage, and just throw the blender in the trash. Just buy another blender when you do it again.
Yeah, there you go.
That's what being an adult is all about, because we got money like that.
Yeah, just chuck the blender in the trash. And also, they're always on sale. Just wait till like Black Friday and buy 20 blenders. That means you have 20 shakes a year to go with on discount. You can't beat that.
So anyway, I put out an album.
Pork chops, can we fit into this album? We have to know.
Oh my God.
Tremendous.
Yeah, this album of yours. Tell us about some of the songs on there.
Well, there's Gravy Train.
Yes.
And Turkey Burger. Yeah, so this album is called The World is Square, which I named it a long time ago, and I begrudgingly yelled it at the World is Square band when I met those kids. They thought it was pretty funny because I was upset that they beat me to it, but they're all good kids, and it's a cool band. So it's The World is Square, named after the puzzle in Final Fantasy VI, and I only have the stuff from like my favorite time, the Squaresoft RPG before it was Square Enix. Mm-hmm. And so I have tracks from Final Fantasy 4, 6, 7, Chrono Trigger, and Secret of Mana. And
which that is it. The golden era of Squaresoft RPGs.
Yeah.
You got it. The title of The World is Squeenix just doesn't have the same ring to it either.
No. Kind of makes me wince.
Mm-hmm. Just
Squeenix. I have two from Final Fantasy IV. I did the theme of love, and I did that with Elaine Lee, who was in the band Select Start. If anybody remembers them from back in the day,
I love them.
So I did this cool R&B groove with a beautiful violin over it, playing Rose's theme, which is awesome. And from Final Fantasy IV, I also did the main theme of the game, which is one of my absolute favorites. And that one I got Yusuf Kelebrew. He's this cool drummer, and I guess he's a very much a multi-instrumentalist, and he's awesome. And he does V jams and plays just with a bunch of video game music homies, like in the MAGFest scene and whatnot. But he played live drums for me, which is awesome. And then I did Final Fantasy VI. I did the coin song, which is the sad mix of the Edgar and Sabin theme.
I'm actually about this now, because I was going to say, coin song ended up being my favorite one on the album.
Oh, yeah?
My favorite track happens to be the sad mix.
Yeah, I took an interesting approach that my friends that I showed it to suggested. It doesn't have a lot of percussion, or it doesn't have like a drum beat the whole time, because the original doesn't have any percussion. Mm-hmm. And I do bring in this nice East Asian inspired beat later in the tune. And everybody wanted me to put it in the whole time, but I didn't want to do that. And so it has this really interesting flow that Elaine, again, on the violin, really just crushed and made just totally sing for me, which was awesome. And then I did put in my fat beat later in the tune. It is really interesting. It's different from me. It's not the usual Mustang fare, but it definitely sounds like me, and it's cool. And I also did,
before we forget, yeah. I'm gonna forget if I don't. So as you're going through this, you've mentioned what sounds to be like quite the eclectic dream team of people, but they're kind of like mentioned like in snippets, like when you get to the thing. But I thought it'd be pretty cool to just have like a rundown, like just flat out, like who all the people would you say you got to get to work with you on this album, just like in one shot.
Well, Elaine Lee of Select Start fame, and Yusuf Kelebrew, who is just awesome. And I got Al Sean to play acoustic guitar for me. Grandpa's guitar, as he would call it.
Grandpa's guitar.
Al Sean from Lonely Rolling Stars.
It's kind of odd that I feel like I know him for a weird reason. And then I'm thinking about a different guy. I'm like, keep going. I was real.
I had Tim Yarbrough played Grandpa's guitars on a couple of tracks. He's in the One-Ups. And I had William, Tim plays acoustic guitar on one, electric guitar on another. I had William Reyes, William Carlos Reyes from the One Ups play on one tune. He plays a jazz guitar. And I had, oh man, I should probably have the album in front of me.
The album's in your mind, man.
Yeah, it was in my mind. And then I put it down on whatever a CD is made out of, or digital bits, I guess.
Turned into a bunch of geometric ones and zeros.
That's right.
I mean, we already covered that our memories are failing, so you got to, you know, be patient.
Yeah.
This circular acrylic disc.
Oh, here it is. I found the digital booklet. Yeah. So, I had on the first track, which was the one that I finished first, is Jacqueline Kia Marlin, this girl that came in and sang. And then the last track is Final Fantasy VII and Serenity. I've actually released it a few times, but I got Frank to do a little remaster for me. And it has Lisa Lehmans and Jennifer Graham doing vocals on that one, along with Tim playing the electric guitar. So I think that's all of the features as it... Yeah, that's all of the features. Mm-hmm. But that first one, The Secret of Mana, is buck wild because I seriously finished it in 2003. And this girl that came in and recorded, I think I met her on MySpace or something.
Oh, God.
And... Yeah.
Were you a friend? You met her because she was friend. You both were friends with Tom. What a coincidence, right?
Yeah, right. We both knew Tom. So she was like 14 at the time, and she was looking to do music projects, and I had something to work on. So she came over and recorded that, and that was awesome. But you know, that was that was a long, long time ago.
And does so she know that the song is finally releasing?
Yep, I sent her. I sent her a copy of the CD like a couple weeks ago. I've sent her a couple copies, and thank you. That's so awesome. Yeah,
can you imagine? Like you said, she was 14 when she did it. So I was like, imagine at this point in her life, like she's like a whole other person now. She's like, oh, by the way, here's this ridiculously awesome thing I did, and it just came out of nowhere. It's like, here you go. The legacy. Yeah, it's
buck wild. Golly, I'm old.
For real, is she in her 30s now, if I'm doing the math right?
Oh, man, I can't do math, bro. I think.
Nah, she's close to 30, at least.
Close to 30.
And that's just amazing. I guess that's interesting to hear. Like, oh, by the way, remember that thing you did? I don't know. I was hopped up on pixie sticks and hyperactivity at the time.
Half her lifetime ago, she did this song.
Yeah, that's buck wild, man. Ah. I am not good at doing things by myself. That's what's so crazy, and that's why I asked for somebody else to hold me accountable, because this just had no deadline, and any deadline I imposed on myself, it just wasn't sticking. So well, I put...
I guess you're probably about to lead into it, but I was going to say, okay, so what would you say was the turning point on getting your productivity on track to get this bad boy put out?
I'm not sure what made me... what clicked and made me ask Jason, but whatever that was, whatever made me say, you know what, maybe it's because I'm trying to do this myself and I need someone else to let down. So so I went to Jason and asked him, and he said, yeah. And so that gave me some accountability, because I don't want to let him down.
Yeah.
And so he helped me work with it. He listened to everything, gave me feedback. I changed the intro on the Chrono Trigger from the bottom at his guidance before. I had kind of more of a long, drawn-out, keyboard-only thing that I was already doing on Coin Song. So he helped me rein in some stuff, not only rein in the record, but some of my musical ideas. So he was a big help, and I think it ended up making it a great album. And then Frank Vontende. How do you say Frank's name?
I don't fucking know. Vontende?
Vontende? I don't know.
Diggy dis.
Frank is a longtime friend of ours that does great audio production. He's a great arranger himself, and he does a lot of mixing and mastering for folks. And he came in and mixed and mastered this album for me, what Dale didn't already mix himself. Dale North actually mixed that Secret of Mana track and the Final Fantasy VII track. I finished them so long ago.
You know what that Dale means, did those. Seems like going forward, you need to come up with like every album or every project you do, you need to have someone attached to it just to be the motivator, like the guy that's just standing in the corner with their arms crossed with like a crossed like expression on their face, like, crap, I get this thing done. This track is what we done a week ago. He's looking at me.
Yeah, definitely. That's the plan. I got a keyboard, a new keyboard, a Yamaha MX something, 49, that's it. And I needed a new keyboard to play in the 1-ups that was more updated and versatile. And it was such an inspiring keyboard. There's so many cool sounds, and I was super into chill hop music at the time, listening to City Girl a lot, and I just started making chill hop music on that keyboard. So I probably have like 30 scratch tracks right now, and damn, there's probably 10 original and 20 video game arrangements. And I'm as soon as we're done getting this album out, and in addition to putting this album out on Valentine's Day, my band, The 1-Ups, has an album coming out like on the 21st or something of February. So once all that dust has settled, I would like to take this chill hop stuff and put out some demos and then shop it around, I think. I would go to the different video game labels that are out there now, like Tiny Waves and Game Chops and Materia, and see who will help me the most to finish making this album.
Who will cross their arms the hardest?
Yeah.
Get Jason back on the job.
Yeah, who's going to send me a cardboard life-size cutout of themselves crossing their arms that I can put behind my computer monitors and will force me to work with great intensity?
I got to ask, so there's like this, there's an interesting concept I've come to realize when it comes to like a lot of like, you know, bands like this. So like, time happens, you know, you were younger, you had time to spare just playing games and playing instruments and just living your life. And as you become older, you have to give something up sometimes because, you know, life is getting hectic. You have to miss it. You may have some kids. You may have a steady job. And unfortunately, something has to go. And usually ends up being the games. But I noticed the passion for the music in the games that you played before never truly died, which is how you're able to still continue to, like, make these exceptional recordings based on those experiences. But would you say there's been an opportunity for you to play anything since then to be like, okay, here's the, and you can like come be like, here's the state of the game music today compared to what it was when I was really into it?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
I totally understand.
I think it's just bigger. That's all. You're right. I don't have a lot of time to compartmentalize into what I would like to do or rather do. There's what I have to do and then what I want to do. And so I don't know. It's an interesting relationship, music and I don't necessarily separate the video game from the non. But I definitely recognize it. So what I mean is that I see a lot of people talking about Celeste and its soundtrack. I don't know what that is. So then I go and listen to it one day. And the first time through, I mean, I kept listening to it, but I wasn't super like just hooked right away. But after it was done, I found myself going back to it later in the same day. And then I think didn't listen again for another couple of days, and then when I listened that next time, I was like hooked, and I've listened to it. I probably listened to the full OST for Celeste a couple of times a week at work. And cause I just love it. And Lena just knocked it out of the park with this. So that was, you know, back in its hype. And then the 1UPs got the divine calling to perform at the PAX West Penny Arcade Expo. And I, just because I know people and I know how things are and I see things on Twitter, I was pretty sure that Lena Raine, the composer, lived in Seattle. And I figured she'd probably be at PAX doing panels and stuff. So I just reached out and said, hey, my band is coming to PAX. We play video game music. We would love to play music from Celeste on stage. And if you would like to come join us, we would love to have that. And so she wrote back and said that she had been a fan for a long time and that she would love to do that. Like, that's that was awesome.
That's slick.
So we did that. So it was such a cool surprise for the audience that I was able to say, do you like indie games and do you like Celeste? Well, cool. Well, here to help us play the music from Celeste is the composer of Celeste. And people were just like lost their minds. And we played a version of Reach for the Summit and it was fun. And up until that time when she was on stage with us and that was great. And then, you know, months go by and then here we are in like the first couple of weeks of January. I see Celeste on my kids' Nintendo Switch. And it was like only a few bucks because I had so many points or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I bought it. That was the first time I played and saw what the game actually was.
Oh, my God.
I had no idea. I'd never played it. I'd seen a couple of stills because I was like looking at looking for the composer information and stuff. But I'd never seen it in motion. I didn't know what it was. I heard people saying it was hard but beautiful. Didn't know. So I bought the game and I started playing it and I was like, wow, I know all this music. So it's not about the games for me so much as it is about the music. So I have loved this, listened to this many times, worked with the composer, did this arrangement with the band, and then now we have a wholly separate arrangement that is going to blow people away. Lena doesn't even know yet. This is super exclusive, but we have a version of Reach for the Summit that I can't pronounce its name. It's on the new 1UPs album, and it's sung completely in Portuguese. It is a bossa nova. It is absolutely incredible. One of the coolest things we've ever done.
Damn.
And that blows sales through the roof. I can tell you right now.
So it's very exciting. And the boys worked really hard to make this happen. It was pretty much Tim's idea. And then Tim wrote lyrics for William to translate to Portuguese. And then William made a translation and I recorded him singing it. And I helped him work on it to fit this here and do this. And I am not yet done editing it and sending it off to be mixed. And it's already February 2nd. Gee whiz. so I have a lot to do. But it's very exciting. It's going to be very good. And I still have only played about like 25, 30 minutes of the game. So video game music, regular music, abnormal music, whatever. I make time for music. And if the games come with it, that's cool. I don't really know how much.
That's a good answer.
Yeah, to your question, I know that I really enjoyed Undertale. I played Undertale probably 2 years after it came out, and it was the most like visceral, emotional experience I had since playing Chrono Trigger. So I thought that was pretty amazing, and I love the music in that game.
But I have the same experience with that music that you had with Celeste before you played it. Whereas but the music is so good.
Same thing. I listened to that soundtrack a lot before I played the game, and then I played the game, and then the context of it made it more emotional and stuff for me. But it was I was looking at what are good. I guess they call it couch co-op now, like, because you can play so many games online. I wanted to find a good game that the four of us could play, my wife and my two crotch fruit. And I heard about this game, Overcooked 2.
Yes! I was hoping.
So I found this game and I just read about it. And I didn't look at any videos or anything. And just, again, just I kind of just jump into things because I like to have an experience. And I bought this game and then we all sat down and played it. And it's just like the most crazy game. And it's so much fun. And like some of the music is really good. And I'd like to do some arrangements of it. So that's on my list of things to do. So things are still happening. I make time for games, but I make it with my family more. And again, with the one-ups, I think Tim Yarbrough and the band, I think he has a Switch, and I think he played through Mario Odyssey. Otherwise, he just was seeking out stuff. But he brought in Steam Gardens for the one-ups to learn, mm-hmm. and we turned it into a authentic surf rock tune and recorded it and got it all done and set it aside. Then my kids get a Switch for Christmas, and one of the games they get is Mario Odyssey. And then I go in and hear my daughter and her friend, they're playing the game, and they're in the Steam Gardens or whatever, because that's what it's called. And it's a freaking forest, and the music doesn't fit at all. Like, what? Like, well, this is like a surf rock tune, and it's in this forest where I'm expecting, you know, Beware the Forest Mushrooms from Mario RPG. So it's just really interesting. It's still, it's great, and it's in a, and it works in its own weird way because it's Mario and it's Koji Kondo. But it was so interesting to see that, like, when you have an idea of something outside of the game first and then what it is inside the game, it can be such a shock. But these tracks that I did for this album, The World of Square, all came from a nostalgic, emotional place. And I think that's why, even after all these years of working on it, where I did finish the last one, you know, at the end of last year, they still have a consistency to them because of that long love and nostalgia for those musics, if that makes sense.
I think it does very much so. It's a love that traveled through time to remain cohesive throughout all incarnations of tracks. Now, honestly, I was, like I said, I've been enjoying the Living Daylights. I was glad that you said it was done in 2003 for that first track. Like I said, the Fear of the Heavens, that was unexpected to hear, though at the same time, I almost shouldn't have mattered because just how it just good music is permanent. Good music just works. And in your case, it works out in spades. And honestly, I'm looking forward to seeing what your next projects will be as well. Like you said, the upcoming One Ups album. So,
I'm very much looking forward to the next One Ups album. I'm kind of disappointed that I didn't already know about it and before like a couple days ago when I saw it on the Facebook page. So I'm very excited about more One Ups.
Man, I've been blasting the Twitter for months about it, saying Volume 8 is coming. Volume 8 is coming.
No, that's the joy of algorithms. That nothing fucking shows up when you want it to.
Oh, see, I use a different third-party API thing that puts everything in order, and I can't Twitter otherwise. But and that's also that problem with Facebook. Social media, man. WTF.
Seriously.
Social media is a pain in my butt, but at the same time, I can't seem to give her up. She's just in my blood.
Yeah, so it's an exciting time. I'm glad that you're enjoying it and that you're looking forward to the next one. I don't know. I mean, if I do this chill hop thing, it will be in the same vein in that it'll just be, you know, chill music. And I hope that I can do that. And I hope it doesn't take me freaking 16 years. I am definitely making it a point to be more prolific. Not that I haven't done anything in the past 16 years, of course, because the mantle above my fireplace in my home is like just stacked with CDs that I have made. It's just the idea that I didn't have a deadline. There was no fear. It wasn't the fear-based. I'm a fear-based person. The deadline is coming up. Yeah, I texted Frank last night at like 2 a.m. I'm like, oh my God, it's February 2nd. Are we going to have this one-ups thing done in time? And he's like, yeah, baby, don't worry. Strawberry pancakes.
In that exact tone.
Strawberry pancakes. God damn. Right,
relaxed and aroused. Man, let's do this.
Yeah. So, but now I'm now, I mean, this is the first time I've ever like released an album with a plan, because I did it with an actual person that does marketing. So I've had these CDs in my hands since November, the beginning of November.
You should have sent me one. I'm waiting on mine.
Yeah.
I ordered mine. Habit.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you. I will spend your money on drugs.
Sweet.
I saw this is so weird that I've had this CD. Just been sitting on it. I asked everybody who had worked on the album if they wanted one, and Jacqueline was the only one who said, yes, please, and gave me her address. So I guess everybody else is just tired of me. But but yeah, so it's been interesting to be able to sit on it and think about it and watch the press happen, because it's also this, you know, pre-release thing that they're doing with it. And it's exciting. But it's also kind of overshadowed, I guess, by the panic of trying to finish the 1UPS album in time. Because this is normally how it goes. this like, here we are. The World is Square was pressed on CDs, done on my bookshelf in November. And here we are. I haven't recorded my bass part yet for Dr. Mario. I have not sent him everything that he needs. And he has not finished any track yet. But somehow we are going to have these CDs shipped to Minnesota where we are performing this show and have them in hand in time, because that's what we do. Or at least that's how I operate.
God damn.
Usually. It's going to be by the skin of my teeth as usual, but I am the luckiest person in the world, so I know that it's going to happen.
And it will be glorious.
Yes, it will be glorious. It's going to be a weird album.
I can't wait, man. I can't wait. Awesome. You're getting me more excited the more tracks that you're name dropping. I'm excited for more 1UPS.
Yeah. Make me something, though. I'm not sure if this is an unanswerable question. I totally understand, because it's an oddity. So I'm sure when you pick a lot of your tracks, you base it on both a love and affection, plus also the feasibility of being able to put out something that you think sounds like, you know, good for, you know, listener ears. But if you can think of a track that's from your past that you would like to see done like a weird rendition, like something that may not sell, but you'd love to personally hear it exist. Like, say, for example, like...
I'm going to have to stop you right there, because I'm super rude, and just say that I've got the answer to your question locked and loaded. It's Duckling Duck from the Super Nintendo soundtrack as a jazz quartet.
Oh, yeah. The funny thing about that is, like, I definitely know that would sell. Shoot.
Man, it's too weird. It's too out there. It's Darkwing Duck. People didn't play that as much anywhere near as much as DuckTales or even Tailspin. I don't know. Yeah, and there was never anything else that happened, right? I think there was a Game Boy version that came out maybe at the same time, but that was it. No more Darkwing Duck.
So you would be tapping a pretty untapped vein there, and then giving it a really cool rendition, admittedly. So that's... God, I'd make that two people want to hear that, because I would play the Darkwing Duck game more than like two stages, and I would still want to listen to that.
The music is so good. I can't remember which composer. It was the same as Mega Man 2 or 3, but it's fantastic. It's all meant to be, I mean, it all implies this jazz swing era stuff. But I would love to handpick some people, or even hook up with Zorsi from the Consoles, the Australian jazz video game band, and just have them do it. Like, I just would like to work on the charts and just do it, and it's just a straight quartet of upright bass, drums, piano, and saxophone sometimes.
That'd be awesome.
Just be so good. The composer. But I'm like, I wonder who it was too. And it was Bun Bun.
Yeah, Mega Man 3, same as Mega Man 3, which is probably why I'm so drawn to it, because Mega Man 3 is like, I can't tell if it's, I mean, I think it's because of the nostalgia part edges out as my number one. But even though I didn't play Mega Man 5 very much, the 5 music is my favorite.
Honestly, I think you're dead on. People say it's nostalgia, but I think it's typically the nostalgia that sends people to 2. Like, when you really get your hands in the gravy pot, I think 5 is the best for music. 3 is the best for gameplay and like just general package, overall package. Like, it's weird, but is this, if this was the episode for, we'd be talking about that for like 30 minutes.
Yeah, so one day, you know, when my kids are grown, I'm going to go back and in my 50s and say, you know, that one Nintendo game that nobody played? Here's this jazz quartet.
It's going to be like, you know, like when you pass on, I'm like, okay, we found this key. And apparently it goes to this door. What's inside? You just open it up. It'll just trigger the sound. Like, like, what the heck is this? Like, it's a secret ensemble track that he recorded.
Oh, Jesus.
It'll be gold.
That's a good question, though. I'm glad that I had an answer locked and loaded.
Yes, you did. That was phenomenal. I was like, I've got you.
You were ready on that one.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that I still want to do. I've started making a list of singles because I want to put out a track every month. I tried really hard to do it this month and shove it in the last few days, which is why I had all my instruments out and I was doing this Ken arrangement that I have. But with both of these albums coming out, I think that people will be okay if I don't put something, an individual track out in February and January. But I want to do that more. I just recently added yesterday Dungeon Master for Super Nintendo. It's a weird one, but there is a tune in that game that just jams. It's called the Hall of Champions, and I wanted to do an arrangement forever, so I'm going to eventually do that. So there's still like a long list of things to do that I just am never going to run out.
There's always music to cover.
Yeah.
That's what you want, because it could be worse. You could be sitting here scrambling like, I got to find a track I want to play with more. This is depressing. So,
yeah, I've got plenty of stuff. And this, that's how I tried to approach this new The One-Ups album. I originally wanted to do a 15-year anniversary back in 2017, but I couldn't motivate the bros to get something. So then I thought, okay, well, let's just do a Sweet 16 album for 2018, and we'll each pick 4 tracks, and we can't argue with those choices, and we will do that. And that'll give us 16 tracks for our Sweet 16. And I couldn't motivate these. So we did start off doing that. So, like, William picked Surf City from Battletoads. Okay. Nobody's ever heard that because no one can get past the second or third level, but let's do that. So we did that, and Tim picked the legendary theme from Guitaru Man.
Hell yeah.
So, okay, let's do that, except we didn't do it, and just he did it all by himself. I don't know what happened, but Tim was like, okay, well, I'm just going to record this. And he recorded all the guitars and the bass, and then Jared did drums. This album has 5 bass players on it.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I don't know what that means. I don't know if it makes it better or what, but it's going to be buck wild.
Each time.
Yeah, possibly. And some of the tracks do have 2 bass players at the same time. So it gets funky. And then I picked The Streets of SimCity, which is my arrangement of Metropolis from SimCity on Super Nintendo. And I'm so excited because I finally got to do my full horn section that I've always wanted to have in this band. It's buck wild, y'all. It's a full on jam. Just like my version of the like Saturday Night Live intro. Just like seeing all the city stuff going on and cars going and nighttime. That's what this sounds like to me, which that's is so awesome. Cool. Cause like she, I don't know if you saw this, these kids released. So SimCity was going to come out on Nintendo, but it never did, but it did show at one CES, like in 1990 or 1992 or something. And they almost had the full game, but these kids found the info for it and got extracted in NSF and cleaned it up. And so Soya Oka, the composer of SimCity Nintendo, SimCity Super Nintendo, Super Mario Kart, Pilot Wings, she's amazing. She actually wrote all this music for SimCity, and all of it is crazy good, but the Metropolis theme was the same. She loved her Metropolis theme so much on the Nintendo that she redid it on the Super Nintendo, and it's, you definitely got to go check it out and hear it. It's just buck wild. And the Capital theme on the Nintendo version is, it is just awe-inspiring. I am definitely going to do an arrangement of that. She's just incredible. So I SimCity is one of my top soundtracks. I just absolutely love it from the Super Nintendo and now from the Nintendo, but you know, nobody's ever played that game. But yeah. Anyway, I was very excited to do that. I got to bring back Anthony Lofton.
Yay.
He's on 5 tracks playing saxophone and keyboards. And I had some great guests on my album, but my goodness, the stars on the on the new one, whoo, we've got it's just buck wild. Anthony, Garrett Jones is one of the bass players. He played on the bass some stuff on the songs for the recently deceased album, the first album that the band put out whenever I wasn't in the band. So I get to be totally objective about it. He and Adams Collins is a kid that I went to school with, a friend of mine. Last time I went trick-or-treating was with him when we were like 16 or something.
Damn.
but he came and he played banjo on one of the tunes. And we've got Anthony, like I said. I brought in some heavy folks. I got David Ortiz from the Mariachi Entertainment System to play trumpet. I got Robbie Benson to come in from the Super Soul Bros and play some keys.
Damn.
It's just been wild. I brought in our friend Elizabeth to play violin on some stuff. So that Dr. Mario that I name dropped earlier, we're finally putting out our arrangement of Dr. Mario that we used to play all the time back in the day.
Now for our home consumption.
Do what?
I was like, now ready for home consumption.
Yes, yes, that's right. These pills have been packed tight, and I'm happy to exclusively let you know that Dire Dire Docs has finally been recorded.
Oh, it's about goddamn time.
Yes.
It is... It is an evolution, though, of the Dire Dire Docs that you all have come to know and love from the video that was recorded 16 years ago or whatever.
Back in the day. But
it is incredibly satisfying to actually have this done, have the violin, and it's just great. I had to have Anthony come back and help us finish arranging it. Because we had never really finished arranging it. We just performed what we had cooked up real quick.
Yeah.
And I brought up Moose, who played bass in the band. He was our bass player, playing bass on that video that we did. He came back and took a break from his medical schooling to play bass on a few tracks. And that was one of them. So that was very satisfying as well. Man, so there's just a... A lot of cool stuff. There's some old stuff for sure. Some new stuff that is buck wild, and it's going to be an interesting album for sure.
And my ears are all kinds of ready for the magic that's going to come into their drums as this heavily drops. Believe it.
Yeah, I am looking forward to playing some of the new stuff on the show when it's ready to go.
Yeah, it will be a tight squeeze to get this bad boy out in time. I think I'm going to be paying expedited shipping, so it's going to be wild. But
those bass players together. Stop.
Yeah. So there's going to be 14 tracks on that one. Yeah.
Nice.
I can't tell you the name yet, but trust me, it's good.
Is it Volume 8?
No.
Okay.
3-Up Moon.
Oh, man. Well, I know we've been chatting for quite a while. Pernell, I know you have an eye appointment that you need to get to. Is there anything else, Mustin, that you wanted to talk about before we wrap this up?
No. I appreciate everybody, all the feedback so far on my album. It's such an awesome thing to finally get something done with just my name on it. And I know that I have some very special guests on there, and I know I've done some things before. Like if you look me up and you can find the album Origins on Spotify and stuff, but that was, just a bunch of stuff that had gone out of print that I put together, that I had done. So this is, I'm excited for people to hear what I've been working on in the off season for so long. And the response has been overwhelming, to see it announced on Famitsu and see like hundreds of likes and all the shares and stuff. It's been very awesome. So I'm really excited about that. And I'm very excited to do a new The One Ups album with you, or for you all, with them, actually. Even though I did executive produce part 7, because when I got back in the band, they had recorded so much stuff that there was enough to put out an album. And part 7 is kind of a grab bag of different things, you know, with all their stuff that they did, and then the Command and Conquer heavy metal, and there's the hip hop. You know, it was a real grab bag of stuff. But I was able to help them do that, but I didn't play on any of it. So it is exciting to be able to put out a new album with the band, since I've missed out on the last two. And I've already got the cover and the name and everything imagined for the 9th album, which I hope comes sooner than later. Me so too, man. So I'm hoping to be a lot more prolific this year. I made it a constant goal to be working on. So thanks for listening, and I hope to bring out some more stuff up until I die with my copy of Darkwing Duck Jazz Quartet in my hand.
No, you got to make the secret. You got to make the secret room a thing.
Oh, the secret room will have another cool project in it. But I think having that disc in my hand, saying "Take this to Spotify head office," I think that'll be much more romantic.
Perfection.
Oh man! On that note, thank you so much for coming on and chatting with us. It's been way too long since you've been on the show. I think you were on episode 200, and this is now 451.
Holy cow!
So it has been way too long since you've been on the show. You're gonna have to come back when the One Ups album is ready to go.
Yep, just give me a call. Just send out the Darkwing symbol.
Will do. Mustin, thank you so much for joining. Purnell, thanks for hanging around as well. I know you're going to be back on the second half of the show. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to be back with more show in a little bit. Mustin, do you have any final words to end this?
Let's get dangerous. But not with drugs.
Yes, if you didn't say that, I'd have been very upset. Like, come on, man. You got to do it.
All right, I got to get trapped. They're letting me out of the closet. Okay, guys, thank you so much.
Go before they close the door again.
Yep, hold on. Okay, yep, thanks, guys. I got to go.
Have a good night.
All right, thank you.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. Another big thanks to Mustang for coming on and chatting with us. Pernell, you're still here. How's it going?
Man, these time portals are just getting weirder and weirder by the month. I mean, I could have sworn that it's been days, and yet apparently it's actually been minutes.
It's been about 5 minutes, yeah.
I'll be damned.
Yeah, crazy, huh?
It is. That must mean my powers are getting a little out of control. I got to tame these bad boys.
It is still very clearly Saturday morning for us. It is not Tuesday late night when I should be finishing the editing on the show, and instead I'm still recording.
Technically for me, I am still eating my morning cereal too. I mean, that's the other thing that's interesting. My cocoa berries, crunch berries, which is an odd cereal that exists apparently. I went looking for marshmallow peeps cereal.
I was looking for that too, and I can't find it.
Same here. I can't find that, but I did find these weird Cap'n Crunch things, which is, like I said, it's like chocolate berry Cap'n Crunch.
Weird.
Very weird. Everybody's trying to get crazy now in the cereal department. It can't. Remember back when we would go to home and our parents would have grape nuts in the cabinet and we were expected to like grape nuts, but we didn't. Well, correction, most people didn't. I surprisingly did like grape nuts. People laughed at me for that.
I've never had grape nuts.
They are blandly good.
Blandly good. Like, you want to know a good cereal combination? You know how you used to mix cereals when you were a kid?
Mm-hmm.
I found a really, really good combination.
Which one?
Half a bowl of Special K Chocolate Delight. That's the Special K with the little chocolatey pieces in it.
Uh-huh.
And then the rest of the bowl, Honey Nut Frosted Flakes.
Oh, I haven't even tried the new Honey Nut Frosted Flakes. But that sounds like a good combination.
It's dude, like, that combination. Like, I went to have cereal the other night, and I poured the Special K, and I'm like, oh, God, there's only half a bowl. What else do I have? And I saw the Frosted Flakes. I'm like, I only have a half a bowl left of this. Fuck it. Mixed together. It was amazing.
And now you'll always be splitting the tide.
I probably will, because I bought both cereals again.
See, this needs to be a thing. Cereal fusions, like, and these like, I mean, we experimented as kids, but no one really documented them. No one documents cereal fusions. Maybe that should change.
That's your project.
I can get down with that. I'm already looking for like the area's best wings. I've got cereal fusions, and maybe you can get, maybe a studio could be listening to this right now, and they'll come up with an idea where their next roguelike game will involve blending cereals for status effects. That would be slick. And they can always come up with fake names for the cereals too, so they're not copyright infringing, like Munch Balls or Munch Berries or something.
Munch Berries.
It'd be so good.
Just treading that line.
Frosted Corn.
I think you could get away with Frosted Flakes, because I've seen generics still called Frosted Flakes.
I guess that makes sense, because I guess the Kellogg's Frosted Flakes is what makes it the trademark. Like, you know them as Kellogg's Frosted Flakes.
Yeah.
Because I don't think anyone ever calls Corn Puffs Kellogg's Corn Puffs, and they're Corn Puffs. Frosted Flakes is Kellogg's Frosted Flakes. Even the commercials. The commercials always said Kellogg's Frosted Flakes.
No, mm-hmm. we found the magic. It's the Kellogg's.
Just slapping on there. Everything
Special
works.
K and Frosted Flakes are both Kellogg's, though.
Kellogg's Blood Extraction. Oh, now I do want to donate blood. Kellogg's, shit. We're suffering a severe blood drought. Please donate blood. I don't know, man. I'm not a big fan of these. You heard of that new shit? Kellogg's Blood Extraction.
Oh, my God.
Saturday morning treat.
Saturday morning treat. Jesus, Pernell. All right, I'm going to have to stop the cereal talk. We got a lot more show we got to take care of, a lot of reviews that we got to tackle. You've got three to talk about. Are you ready to get started?
Let me just pour this milk into this bowl real quick and we'll be good to go.
God damn it.
What the fuck was this game?
You're insane. Anyway, first game that we have to talk about tonight is called Record of Agarest War Marriage, developed by Idea Factory, published by Idea Factory International, released January 31st on Steam for $29.99. This story explores reincarnation through several generations as the archdemon continues to spawn even after the current hero vanquishes them. In this strategy RPG, fight as the hero or the chosen one, who is trusted to produce an heir who can put an end to the archdemon once and for all. Brunel, tell us about it.
So, for those who are familiar with the series, the Record of Agarest War has been around for a little bit. 360 had a couple, PS3 had a couple of them. And then this bad boy comes out, which is apparently a port of a 2012 PSP ROM game that never came to the States. So we're finally getting access.
I'm surprised, learning shit on this show.
I bring the heat, baby. But one thing worth noting, first and foremost, before I even go into the game proper, is that if you are familiar with Record of Agarest Wars, you're probably also familiar with how the battle system works in those games. They're usually tactical RPGs. In this case, though, it is actually not a tactical RPG. This is a different take on the concept in which it is a turn-based battle system.
Hmm.
And the way battle flows is that every character, I won't say every character, but there are four like classes of character role. There's the attacker, the defender, the healer, and the supporter. And it's pretty much exactly as it sounds. And your battle party consists of four characters. The main character named Rain, and then his three maidens with their plumage, which I think is hilarious. It's supposedly like ribbon or fabric that wraps around them, which resonates with his magical CL blade stuff. Anyway, the point is they all hang out together in combat. And each one of these characters has to fulfill one of those roles. They don't double down, so you can only have one attacker, defender, healer, and support at a time. And in addition to leveling up your normal stats when you level up, you can also level up the role for the person. And as you level up the role, they'll gain new skills that they can use while they are in the position of that role. However, you are incentivized, very much so, to switch the characters to different roles at different times in order to keep them kind of right, like evenly based and balanced and leveled up, because one character's defender role, for example, won't be like the another character's defender role. They all learn unique skills and abilities within each respective role. So you might have one character who is a better healer at certain times than the other character is, or attacker for that matter. So it behooves you to mix it, go back and forth and try to balance those roles out and get the proper skills that you need. In addition to that, though, combat that utilizes things is, like I said, turn-based. You can see the character turn order in the upper right corner. But the way this game works, which is kind of interesting in addition to what I mentioned earlier with roles, is that there's something called like a link skill. And what happens is if more than one character is in sequence in combat and you have enough GP, like it's one of the resources in the game, enough GP to use it, you can use, MP. You can use a link skill to make them all gang up on the monster at the same time and do more damage to it, which is good for, if you just want to kind of maybe just rock a guy out before he has a chance to strike on a fighting turn or something. Like, you'll do more damage as a group than otherwise. But in addition to just doing that for the purpose of damage, you also develop an affinity in the event that the main character, Rain, who is a guy, is in a linked combo with one of the maidens. If all four of them, for example, are in a link combo, the main character develops affinity with all three of the maidens. It's pretty handy if you're just trying to boost those affinities. Why are you boosting the affinities? Because you want these girls to love you. Why do you want them to love you? Weird shit. But anyway, the point of it is, when you boost the affinity enough, eventually you'll end up going to the inn to relax for the day. Usually, as in typical games, you rest at the inn, you'll level up. You'll get your health points and your GP and your MP back when you rest in an inn. And just to cover something, GP in this instance does not mean gold pieces. It's actually another resource for using skills. It threw me off for a while, too. Anyway, when you're at the inn and you rest up, if you built your affinity enough up with one of the girls, you can have a conversation with them at the inn. And through these conversations, you'll be able to learn more details about the girls you're hanging out with. Though, for better or worse, depending on if you're down with this aspect of the series, another component of the affinity boosting is that eventually you'll go into something known as the unification process with the girl once you boosted the affinity enough with them, which involves a really weird touching mini game where you're trying to find their proper erogenous zones to tap them and make them go, oh yeah, weird shit, I'm going to have a sandwich now after this is done. it's the weirdest thing. Like, I love these games. It's just... And I think I'm curious about this. This isn't even a knock on the game. This is just a general statement that I want to make because it comes to mind a lot. Have you ever played one of these types of games where it's like, hey, hit on these girls and maybe touch them at some point if you guys connect well enough to do so? And I'm like, look, I'm a hot-blooded guy. I'm okay if my game's going to have something like that. It doesn't need it, but I'm not going to complain if it has it. But why is it that they're never like 32-year-olds or people that are like my age bracket? I don't know. I mean, we're all out in an adventure having a ball, kicking butt. go to the bar, have a few beers, you know, bada bing, yeah, this is a good time. I would at least feel like I want to be talking to these girls. They're all like freaking like 12, but the game will tell you, you know, they're over the age of 18. No, come on, whatever. That's just jargon meant to pass the buck. But I digress. The point is, it's a gameplay mechanic. It didn't bother me, but it may bother some other people. And I just felt like I needed to make a comment about why can't they be like 30? Come on, Japan, do something for Purr. Give me that. I'll still buy the games. Oh, but also, once you get past this sequence and you're done dealing with the tappa 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 and the touchy touchy, you will be closer to your maiden. And for each time you get past a level of affinity where you'd have that touching minigame, you will actually grow in affinity to the point where you'll get more GP, which means that they'll be able to do more of their sacred art skills, which are basically special attacks. They'll be able to do more of those in like an outing, because you can't actually restore GP at in-dungeon healing points like you normally can in games like this. So you want to get as much of that gone as possible so you can actually get a little less frugal with it all. And I should also describe how dungeons work, because if I don't, I'll regret not doing so. Dungeons game aren't traditional dungeons. What they actually are is a bunch of nodes connected by lines. And you walk from node to node, and each time you reach a new node, any branching paths from that node will appear, allowing you to decide on which direction to go next. What this results in is dungeons that don't necessarily have any real flair to them, but at the same time, you don't really get lost in them. It's like a bare bones variant of what a dungeon could be. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. I found myself being perfectly content with it, because as you're walking across the lines, enemies can attack you. And if you're in the mood to grind, you can just press the two trigger buttons if you're using a controller. And you'll just go into an instant battle immediately. So you only have to walk back and forth to trigger battles, which I like. It's just kind of nice to be able to just say, hey, I want to fight guys until I'm tired of it. Or I don't feel like I want to get lost, but I can see all these different nodes and where they go. It's an easy peasy method of just getting around the dungeon. No stress, no muss, no fuss. And also, different dungeons can sometimes have affinity ratings to them, meaning that some elements will be stronger and some elements will be weaker. So you might be in a volcano, and while you're in the volcano area, fire attacks are stronger, but water attacks are weaker. Something like that. So you might want to balance your armor or your skills out to account for that. Enemies on the world map, or sometimes in dungeons, depending on how lucky or unlucky you are, there are damage spikes sometimes too, so you gotta be mindful of that. That's one thing I came to notice for sure, and it's worth commenting on. Enemies can, like, out of nowhere, just suddenly be pretty strong on the world map as you're kind of walking around. So don't just get all ballsy thinking you can just go wherever the hell you want, because you might come to regret it if you do that. But it's not to the point where you're going to throw your controller against the TV or anything like that. It's totally manageable. Just be mindful of the fact that not the game's balance isn't necessarily just a matter of if you're in the area, that means you can kill them, because you might find yourself shockingly surprised. But overall, I found that the game was enjoyable due to the fact that it was a PSP port. I actually, it's worth mentioning it specifically because I didn't know it when I first started playing it. And while I'm not usually a big graphics hound, even still, I was like, this doesn't really necessarily feel visually impressive. Like, it doesn't look bad, but there's nothing that's going to make you gasp and go, whoa, that spell looks amazing. Or, whoo, those backgrounds, dude. Nah, you're playing a game that was on the PSP in 2012, only now is they liven it up a bit more, as far like they added a little bit more detail to the character models. And of course, it's not on a tiny, tiny screen. So, but
yeah, plus the Agarest War games have never been huge about like pushing graphical limits. It's more about the gameplay.
I agree with you there wholeheartedly, friend. And honestly, the gameplay here, as far as I'm concerned, is solid. I actually found myself really wanting to actually engage in those combats that I mentioned earlier, because I wanted to get more levels into those support roles so I could see what will this character learn as a supporter versus a defender. You know, I have my options open for when a boss comes around to kick the living tar out of me. but it's just a genuinely fun game. Like, it's only worth mentioning the whole Eroge Sim thing in case that's not your cup of tea, but honestly, if you're already a fan of Agarest games, you know what you're getting into. And if you don't, well, I just explained it to you. So
yeah,
you're welcome.
Well, then $30 on it. What do you think?
I think it's a solid buy for series fans. And if you're not a fan outright, it's at least worth a try. Take what I said to heart. And if it sounds like stuff that may appeal to you, jump on in and get the waters right for you. Cause I think it's fun. I think you'll enjoy it.
Awesome. Next game to talk about is called Tangle Deep, developed and published by Impact Gameworks, released January 31st on the Switch for $19.99, previously on Steam. Enter the magical world of Tangle Deep, a beautifully polished dungeon crawler inspired by classic 16-bit RPGs. Colorful characters, a unique job system, tons of skills, items, and diverse environments with deep turn-based roguelike gameplay, a different adventure every time you play. Pernell, what do you think of it?
Well, you might remember, who am I kidding? You freaking remember. Last year, maybe early last summer or last spring, I reviewed Tangle Deep for the PC. And while I'm typically not a big PC guy, I did enjoy this game and also felt that if it was on a console at some point, I'd be very happy to give it a try there. And holy crap, it ended up on the one console that it was perfectly suited for, being a handheld hybrid console Switch. Tangle Deep is sweet. It is a very deep, classic-style roguelike game with some modern conventions that will make you feel right at home when you play it. For starters, when you boot the game up, it asks you what mode you want to play. There's an adventure mode, which isn't as harsh on you if you end up dying in a dungeon, meaning that if you die, it kind of like cuts your like job point skills, which I'll get to, and your experience and all that in half, and then make you start with all of your items from your safe intact and like whatever talent improvements you made intact. But all the way up to like the hardcore mode where if you die, it erases your save file. You got to start from scratch.
Yeesh.
So you have every end of the spectrum at your disposal here. When you start the game proper, your main character is able to select from a multitude of classes. I think it's like 11 or 12 or so. And each job class provides you with a variety of job skills you can learn as you level them up. And eventually you gain the ability to change jobs. And when you change jobs, you are able to keep the skills you learned from the old job and gain skills from new jobs. But the only thing you ultimately end up losing is whatever job points you earned from combat, because they stay on the job itself. Like, you move between the jobs. You can't like carry job points from one job to another. Like, that'd be kind of cheating, you know?
Yeah.
But you'd also lose the innate skills that came with it. Cause you know, there's like that thing that makes the job always unique. You don't get to carry that over, but otherwise there's a lot of mixing and matching you were able to do if you want to go down that rabbit hole. In addition to those skills, there's also weapon skills you can learn. You typically have to pay for those in town with job points. There's a guy that will teach them to you. And those job skills can only be used if you're using the weapon that you're equipped with, the weapon that they're meant for. Which isn't as bad as it sounds, because unlike a lot of roguelike games or just games like this, period, you can switch between four different weapons on the fly, which is pretty sweet. So, like, I had an axe, a club, a bow, and a sling, and I would just alternate between them as I needed, as my sword master went and just kind of wrecked shop on enemies. The controls, you would think that it would be a little bit more rough to play this on a console, given that it was designed for PC, but they did a pretty freaking good job of adapting this to the Switch. I had no problems adjusting to it. Essentially, what it is the, I guess, maybe we should call them the face buttons for walking, like the cross buttons, let's just call them that. They are used to walk up, down, left, right, and in any of eight directions. But if you feel as though you'd rather use the thumbstick, you can actually hold down the thumbstick, and as long as you're just doing that, you'll be able to like kind of aim the cursor in the direction that you want to perform an action in. So you can say hold up and right on the thumbstick, and then say just to make sure you're like actually focused on the enemy you want to hit that's up and to the right of you, and hit the A button, and bam, you're whacking them in the face. But if you feel as though you just want to walk using the thumbstick or the analog stick, you can just hold down A and hold the thumbstick in the direction you want to walk, and you'll just walk around, which to me, I found it much better than using the mouse. Because I didn't like the like click, 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 click every freaking where. I like just, I want to walk places and do things.
Yeah.
You can press the X button, and it allows you to like kind of cycle through like whatever your hotkey skills are. And it's a pretty smooth transition when you're doing that. You can use the right trigger button to bring up your like a sub wheel, which lets you use like your escape portal to bolt from the dungeon, or to use a flask to drink from, which is basically a healing over time item that you can refill by finding fountains within the dungeon. And there's, aside from that, there's just like a lot of random us just goes on in this freaking game. There are like sub rooms in the dungeon that you can find that allow you to like clear them out for extra experience and job points and items. There are quests you can take on in town where you go into the dungeon and look for bugs. It's like champion boss monsters and just general like secret areas of the dungeon as well. There are boss encounters. There is a monster raising component where you can catch monsters, take them back to town, groom them and feed them to make them like you, and then breed them to make stronger monsters, and then you can take any of them into the dungeon with you to fight with you.
That's
you can
cool.
plant. It's really cool. You beat him till he's like, it's like Pokemon. You beat him to like 15% of health or lower, and you whack him with a mallet, and then you drag him home. It's so weird. Yeah, it works. You can plant seeds in town that you find in the dungeon to grow trees, which then bear fruit for you. You have a safe option in town. You can like, kind of store your items, you know, the typical roguelike thing where it's like, you want this thing to not go away when you die? Pay me to store it. Because he won't even do it for free. What a jerk, right? Offering his services at a cost. What is this? America? But it's honestly a really good game. Like, I actually just recently had a month of playing, like trying to get people to play roguelikes, and I almost wish this was available at the time. I would have immediately recommended this. The group I was playing with was trying to get me to get into Fatal Labyrinth, which is an old Genesis roguelike game, which I personally don't believe held up to the test of time. But this game, with its 16-bit art style, it kind of reminds me of like Secret of Mana, actually, the way the art style turned out. But the 16-bit art style and the polished gameplay feels more like a solid, hey, you feeling retro play this game type game than like an actual game like Fatal Labyrinth would have. It is legit. There's a lot going on here. I want to say it was made by like one guy.
Yeah, Andrew Reversa.
Yeah, can we talk to him, right?
Yeah.
He was an awesome person. I like that guy.
Good musician, too.
He did the music also.
Yep.
The music is also really good.
He's known online as Zircon on Overclocked Remix.
Oh! Wait a minute. I think he's the guy that made... No, I'm thinking that's pro. I'm almost positive he made a Blaster Master track that I like that's on there. I'm about to look that up after this is done. But I bet. And if he done, we're like, dude, not only do I like your game, but I like your music that you were composing on OC Remix many years ago. You're just legit. But this game is solid. It deserved its place on a console, and it actually found its way to one. And it deserves to be loved if you are a fan of roguelike games. This is one of the big boys to have on the system, I think.
Well, then overall, $20. What is your verdict?
Definitely worth the money. Worth every penny. Pick it up. Good.
I will.
You should. There's also unlockable jobs. I forgot to mention that even. It's a good game.
Nice. Yeah, I plan on picking this one up. I'm waiting until our next paycheck. And this one is on my wish list.
Yeah.
But although I'm still holding out hope that it comes to Xbox and PlayStation as well.
It may. I'm not sure. Like, I'm actually surprised it hit the Switch first. Usually the Switch, I guess the Switch is coming up in the world as far as like getting the first hits.
Oh, yeah.
Not that I can complain, because it's definitely, I mean, lack of achievements / trophies aside, it's my favorite system right now.
Yeah, I'm loving the Switch. I just picked up a Katamari reroll today. They did another print run of it, so I was excited about that.
And whereas in my case, episode veteran Chris Taylor talked a mean game about that last five minutes or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That one is something that game you were using called Hopico. Like, they were both on sale, and he was like, they're on sale. And I was like, shit, I have to buy them. My whole excuse for not buying the last 5 minutes was that I was like, well, I like the sound of it from the review, but it's just, I don't want to spend 40 bones on it. Well, now it's 20. Crap. I guess I gotta take the bite.
Hurry for sales.
That's right. That's what I need. And they're still shaking me down hard. Meanwhile, Kingdom Hearts and Resident Evil 2 still sitting there and shrinking. Everybody's all like, oh my God, I'm playing Kingdom Hearts. I'm like, dude, I'm playing Hopico.
Oh my Lord. Anyway, you got one more game to talk about. We should probably get to that. The Book of Unwritten Tales 2, developed by King Art Games, published by THQ Nordic, released February 5th on the Switch for $29.99. Legend foretold it, prophecies predicted it, chosen ones chose to believe in it. Now the adventure saga continues. A sequel is coming. Join Wilbur, Ivo, Nate, and Critter in another classic point-and-click adventure in the wicked world of Adventasia. Help them fulfill their destiny, a destiny as yet unwritten. Purnell, tell us about it.
I just like the fact that there's a character whose name is just straight up Critter. That is freaking gold. But as far as this game goes, one thing worth mentioning immediately right out the gate is that you kind of already mentioned it yourself or touched on it, but this is a sequel to another game, The Book of Unwritten Tales 1. And while The Book of Unwritten Tales 1 is not a required game in order to enjoy this one, there will be references to things that you may not pick up on outright if you have not played that game. Because there's like relationships that already exist, you know, that kind of deal.
Yeah.
That you know about per se. But at the beginning of the game, it kind of gives you like a rough like lead into like, hey, these are these people. Or I was this guy and then I'm not that guy and crazy shit. And they just kind of give you like a really brief rundown that they're also explaining the controls and stuff to you. And they kind of just dump you right in the game. But it is honestly an entertaining point-and-click adventure game. Coming from a person who personally never was a big person really into point-and-click adventure games. Like the closest I ever really got to them was like the Phoenix Wright series because I was so enamored with the story, like that and Danganronpa. But before those guys came along, and I guess 999, I pretty much avoided all of that stuff. And I haven't really been picking up a lot of other ones aside from those three series. But there's no reason for me not to try another game in the genre. And honestly, I was glad to do so because this game is pretty nice. There's an absurd amount of dialogue in it, but it should be because the whole idea is that you're clicking on things, you're learning about what those things are. The character that you're controlling at the time will probably give some kind of interesting banter about the object. If you talk to people, people will have full-blown conversations with you along with multiple dialogue options. And you'll just kind of wind through those. And it's all voiced, too. That's one thing I thought was interesting. There's not a single line of unvoiced dialogue in this game. It's like everything. Which is good, though. Because if you find yourself feeling like you'd be droning on, like, the pass out, if you're just like, it's too much reading here. Which, God, I feel like I have so much ADHD by even saying that. Too much reading in my games! But you don't have to worry about reading if you don't feel like it, because everything's being spoken as well. And the voice acting is, honestly, in my opinion, it's high-quality voice acting. There's no issues here. Same with the actual OST. It's orchestrated. Sounds really nice. And it puts you in the world that you're exploring as you're just kind of touching and pointing and clicking on things. The cross pad, or rather the movement in the game, can be a touch bit eerie or iffy. Like, I wasn't too big on the walking around sometimes because I feel like I'm clicking the button. And the character didn't just kind of want to turn around and start walking properly, so I had to like almost like back her up like a car. But, But ultimately, it wasn't a deal breaker. And one of the things that they added to the game, which I thought was pretty nice, is that if you hit the... Let me look at my damn Switch because I don't know the button layout. I'm old. If you hit the X button, it'll actually highlight or display everything you're able to interact with in the room. So you can just use the right thumbstick to scroll over to it, click it, and your character will walk up to it, and you'll be able to interact with the thing. As you get inventory items, you are able to select it and then either combine it with something if that's the thing that can be done, or you can just use it on the object that you need to use on. And for the purpose of not letting people cheat, the earlier described X button feature does not work while you have an item selected. So you can't like pick up a stone and then like just press the X button and let the game tell you what to do with the stone. Like, no, you still got to figure all that out on your own. That's the game anyway, so you should want to figure it out on your freaking own. But I honestly found myself enjoying it. I liked the one thing I didn't like about it, but I guess this may be a feature of adventure games. You might be able to help me with this stuff. I have a feeling you may have played more of these than I have. But there are a number of moments where like you're in the process of trying to resolve an issue, like trying to figure out what to do, and the trigger to actually to make something happen elsewhere is that you have to talk to the same thing like more than once. Like you can't just be like, okay, I exhausted dialogue with it by going through the dialogue tree and saying goodbye character. You have to keep pressing it again, and it'll bring up new dialogue options, things that you don't expect. So you're almost wondering what the death for every object in the game. You don't know. But it's just a thing that I had to get used to. And also might also be cases where it might be a matter of like I may have just lost track of certain things. Like, what am I supposed to do here? Oh, I'm looking for this object. And it shows up like four screens later. I should remember that it's going to be there. And then once you click on it, you walk back to the other four screens to tell the thing, oh, I found the thing that's four objects, four screens away. Now what? Oh, like maybe I just didn't think to do that at the time. But ultimately, there were a number of times where I was like, oh, crap, I cannot figure out what to do. And I would just go randomly talk to a guy or investigate another object just to try my luck. I was like, oh, now you can do this. Now you can utilize it to do something.
Excellent. Yeah, adventure games can be like that. So not all of them, but sometimes you just got to make sure that you talk to a character and heard everything they have to say, because you never know with adventure games.
And that's honestly, that's like just a thing you got to get used to for me. Or I have to get used to for sure. But while it was bothering me here and there, I was like, I bet this is just how they are. So I'm not going. I'm trying to let this bother me or get me down. Just try to focus on the game itself or the experience I'm having. And I think the experience itself is good. Like I said, there will be character relationships that exist, things that are referenced that you might go, what the hell are you talking about? But it's almost the equivalent of like going to see maybe like a later Star Trek movie or Star Wars movie without having seen a previous one. Like I remember seeing the original Star Wars through Trio, and I saw 4, 5, and 6 before seeing 4. I love how I'm saying 4, 5, and 6 like we knew they were 4, 5, and 6 back then. But anyway, point is, I saw 5 and 6 before seeing 4. And while there were obviously things that just didn't quite click for me, it wasn't enough for me to not enjoy the film. And I was still able to go, okay, well, I'll piece the rest of this together later, or I'm able to infer it from the game as I'm playing through it. But ultimately, you'll just experience that just by virtue of the fact that they made this game. It is a sequel, and you are playing a sequel. But it's a good game, one that I could recommend as a solid, at least try it. Buy it if you are, I see, a fan. Oh, God, I just jumped the gun. I'm gravy.
Anyway. It's okay, Purnell. You do it so much that I just figure you're taking the ball and running with it.
Or running on top of it, like one of those cool circus guys.
You're jumping on it trying to pop the ball.
That's right. Pop a magic bubble.
Well, I guess I'll ask you, $30 on this one, what do you think?
If you're a fan of adventure games, you're looking for your next fix, this is a guarantee, this is a good buy. But otherwise, hard try if you were like on the fence about the concept, because I would honestly be like, if you don't play adventure games at all, go play Phoenix Wright first, then come back for this, because Phoenix Wright is like the epitome. That's what got me into all these games. But if you've already been through all that and you're looking for that hit, this is a good one to take on. So dive into the Book of Unwritten Tales and get that quill pen out and start doodling.
Sounds good.
Oh, thanks. I've been working on, you know, improving my
Oh man, Purnell, it is always good having you on. We got to move on to some other people to tackle some other games, but thanks for being a part of not only the reviews but the interview earlier on as well, chatting with Mustin. That was fun.
No problem, thank you for having me on. It's been like a genuinely solid time. I think it's funny that I bolted out to get my eyes checked and then came right back 5 minutes later.
Yeah, it was a really quick turnaround. So thankfully they weren't that busy.
And surprise, I'm still blind.
Yay.
I can't say. How am I reviewing all these games? Don't ask questions. They're sending us braille codes.
Yeah, obviously, that's how they do it these days.
Play games in braille.
Oh my God, that would be tough.
Yes, it would. I don't even know how that would work. And I keep hearing about, like, did you hear about that guy they said recently played through, like, an FPS, but he was blind, so everything was done by sound?
Wow.
I can't even fathom that. Like, even if you're like, okay, I can hear when enemies are coming, blah, 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 you still have to navigate the entire freaking game. I don't know how that's supposed to work. I just can't.
It blows my mind when I see people do something blindfolded during a GDQ. I can't imagine someone who was born blind learning a full game. That's just insane.
I have to agree with you there.
That is inspiring.
It's crazy what we live. Yeah, if you're determined to do something, you'll find a way. And somebody might go, oh, should just do something other than playing the game. Until you all say, shut the hell up. That's what the person wanted to do. World is rough. Sometimes you need to find something to do to occupy your time in a way that isn't always producing a better human being. So you just want to have fun. And this guy wants to play a game of fun.
And I like doing a podcast for fun.
Damn right. And I like being on podcasts for fun.
Oh, man. Anyway, do you have any final words before we move on?
Winter, what's wrong with you, dude? Get it right. This ain't cutting it. It's 66 degrees today. It's supposed to be 10. I don't know. Whatever it is, it ain't right. Spring's too soon. And also, if you have a fondness for any particular hot wings in your area, let the SML podcast know, because I am seriously collecting information on like the best wings in the U.S. or also just my neck of the woods, but also the U.S.
All right, moving on. Next game to talk about is called 8-Bit Hordes, developed by Petroglyph, published by Sedesco, released February 1st on Xbox One and PS4 for $29.99. From the team that brought you 8-Bit Armies comes a new fantasy RTS as fast-paced and friendly as the original. 8-Bit Hordes is a colorful strategy arcade game that is easy to learn for players of all skill levels. Collect resources, build up and defend your base, amass your army of orcs or humans, and ultimately crush your opponents. Checking this one out. Royal Sefton, how are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I am doing very... Thank you for asking. Not everyone asks me how I'm doing.
Really?
Yeah.
That's weird. Yeah. Reciprocity, you know, reciprocate. It matters.
Yeah.
Be kind.
I appreciate it. Thank you for asking me. That means a lot.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't mean I actually care, but
yeah, very true.
Impression that I do. No.
So how's 8-bit Hordes?
You know what? It's cute. So as the title suggests, it's got kind of an old timey look to it, but it's more voxel than 8-bit. Not to really, you know, get too far into the details or anything or be nerdy about it, but like if you look at the art style and stuff, you can see what they were going for, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Blocks in space, and it's a bird's eye isometric view. But it's cutesy, but it's not like a straight up 8-bit console game either. So, you know, the music's got some like lo-fi sounds in it. The graphics are obviously blocky, just that general aesthetic. But yeah, how can I better put this? So it is simpler in more ways than one. As an RTS, it's very very cute. It's got the two factions. You've got the Lightbringers, and you've got the was it Bloodsworn? I think they're called, which are basically the Alliance and the Horde. If you want to take a page out of the Warcraft book,
yeah,
and you know, a lot of the same tropes and cliches apply here. It's a very by the numbers, by the book, simple, pared down RTS. So the 8-bit aesthetic even goes down to like the gameplay. It's not complicated. It's a fun game. It's a simple game.
Sounds like it's something that's good for newcomers to the RTS genre.
Oh yeah. And you know what? I think there are some ideas there where it seems fairly applicable to console too. Like if this is your first time playing an RTS on a console, I think it's pretty friendly, pretty inviting that way. Not perfect. There are a couple things that I think I would prefer to do a little differently in terms of play control, but it's I think a good start. So like when you create your attack units, let me rewind. You know, you start with your base and you build out from your base with farms, barracks, and then the tech tree unlocks progressively as you take on more and more of the campaign and accomplish certain challenges. There's like a bronze, silver, and gold. Bronze is all you need to finish a part of the campaign, a mission. But silver and gold will unlock more stuff. So you start to take on new units, new buildings to create those units, upgrades for your existing lodge or castle or whatever. But one thing that is kind of distinct from like the Warcraft, Starcraft styles, you don't have like peons or drones or any of those sort of like builder units per se. You have this radius around your lodge and you build these new buildings within that radius. I'm assuming 8-bit armies functions the same way, but I haven't played it myself. You know, you touched on how the two kind of come from the same design or same universe and even interoperate a little bit.
Yeah, and they have a third one coming as well later on this month that I'm sure we'll be talking about eventually.
Yes, I think we will. And it's kind of a simpler way of doing things rather than assigning individual units to mining your crystals or your, you know, harvesting your Vespine gas or whatever. You simply have these mine carts that'll go back and forth to retrieve your gold, your riches, and they actually just kind of pull up to this spigot and then a whole bunch of stuff drops in and they go back and take it over there. We don't manage them individually. You just create more of them and you have to make sure you have enough food to supply them and your units, your foot soldiers, etc. So you build more farms as you grow, and if you build a lodge again, you have another radius to fill. Basically, you just keep branching out, more buildings, more spread, without assigning worker units to creating each one. So it's kind of pared down and simpler, and in that way I think more accessible. But also when you create your units, you assign them to either on the Xbox pad, X, Y, or B buttons. And so you can call them up that way rather than like dragging a reticle or a pointer to collect, you know, a bunch of units and say, go here, go here. Instead, you have a bunch of units that are assigned to the X button, a bunch of units that are assigned to the Y button, and a bunch of units assigned to the B button. You assign them at the time of creation. Then after that, you can simply control up to three independent squads or regiments or whatever you want to call them as you go throughout the map, exploring and pillaging and all that fun stuff.
Gotcha. Anyway, you mentioned you had a couple of gripes with the game. What are those?
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, it's kind of a two-sided coin when I say the game is kind of pared down and simple. From a strategy perspective, it's really just sort of a kind of a flat game. If it doesn't work, double it. Go bigger, go faster, and you'll beat it. It's not a game of great strategic depth. I don't know if that's a reasonable expectation going into it to say, I want my RTS to be challenging. Well, okay, it can be kind of challenging because if you're really racing to put together your army, and you know, you're just not fast enough at it, for example, then I could see that being a challenge. But it's not like there's any sort of complex nuance in what you build versus what your enemy has for you to, you know, take down. You progress throughout the tech tree, you create a bigger, badder mob, and you eventually just overtake everything. It's a very simple strategy game in the end. That's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just that, you know, manage your expectations. This is not going to be a game of tremendous depth.
Yeah.
I also kind of found it just a little difficult to control. There's this sort of jog wheel type thing that you use to create your buildings and your units. You know, on the Xbox pad, left button will bring up buildings, right button will bring up units, shoulder buttons, and you have to hold the stick in a certain direction, and there's like, I don't know, like 12 or 16 notches, almost like a clock that you have to point toward to pick up your units. I want to say 12. And it's just kind of clumsy. Like, it was hard to keep it pointed right at the unit you want. I would have preferred something where, you know, you can use left and right to go across, or maybe it's operator and there's some better way to do it that I just missed. But it was just kind of difficult to identify the unit I wanted to build or the building I wanted to build. Also, when you first start out, I mean, there's so much of the tech tree locked down. The obvious answer to that is progress through the campaign, but sometimes it's little things like you see all these potential areas where you want to expand. Well, I guess that's not really the focus of this campaign mission. Let's just, you know, stomp on through it.
Yeah.
And eventually you can circle back and you can, you know, really take it for what it's worth if you have more stuff to enjoy.
More stuff is always good.
Yes, this is a game about more stuff. I think that, you know, there's a lot about it that's a lot of fun. So none of these gripes are things that should be taken, you know, with any great weight. We're not looking at, you know, the next big Blizzard title here. This is a fun game. This is a fairly lighthearted game. And to that end, also, you know, it's a little immemorable. You don't play this game for the story either. This is really just about raw get down and you know, make war. That's pretty much it.
Cool. So overall, $30 on this one. What do you think of it?
30 could be good. I feel like 30 is a little taller than what I would want to pay. So to me, that's not an insta-buy price. I definitely think that 30 is the most anybody should pay for this game. I would say that if it was running for $15 or $20, then you would definitely get your money out of it. If it's 30, you really like RTSs, or you want to build on that 8-bit armies that you already purchased, oh, sure, then you already know what to expect going into this, I think, and it's nice to have that. So, you know, it's not all bad. Definitely in the try it realm. I personally don't think 30 is quite the right price point. I think that's a little high.
Yeah. I think they're looking at a way to release all three of them together at a combined price. I'm not sure what they're thinking of for a price to get the whole thing. I think 60 for all three of them would be good, but that's probably something we'll talk about later on in the month when we talk about 8-bit invaders.
Yeah, roger that. I think that's probably the best way to go, because you already get two campaigns with this game, and then if you're going with the other ones, you're going to get additional campaigns, you get lots to do, you can do multiplayer with recombine these universes. I think that right there would be just the whole trifecta. Buying this by itself, I think that's part of the reason why I feel like that price might be a little high. So a combo deal, I think, would definitely be a good way to go with that.
Cool. Sounds good. Well, Royal, it is always a pleasure having you on chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final words? All right. Next game to talk about is called Riot Civil Unrest, developed by IVP Productions, published by Merge Games. It released February 5th on PS4, 6th on Xbox One, 7th on the Switch, for $19.99. Riot, civil unrest is a unique, thought-provoking experience that places you at the heart of some of the world's most recent confrontations. Spread across four campaigns and over 30 individual scenarios, Riot, civil unrest lets players control either the protesters or law enforcement in an effort to portray a balanced view of each event. Checking this one out and dying on the way. Jacob Garner, how are you doing?
You just told them.
I thought maybe you would have some hands-on experience of how you're doing.
I got hands-on experience.
How's Riot?
I wanted to like this game. Let me put it first. It's different. The art style is different, and the art style actually works for the game. It's just like pixelated. I'd even call it like a pixelated mess. But the thing is that it's just like the way it looks. It might not have worked for some games, but for this game, it actually works. And it's one of those things where it's just like you kind of have to see it for yourself. But it works for the Riot settings and how everything is chaotic, and it's just a big jumbled mess as like you're trying to make sense of what's going on. So as you said in the description, you've got four different riots, like, which are actual historical events. One of them the game creators actually like lived through.
Wow.
I'm not sure which one it is, but and they try basing the game on making it like a level experience. Like, they don't exactly favor the rioters, but they're not exactly saying that the police are the best people ever either. That's up for you to decide, and they want you to research the events and come to your own conclusions.
Interesting.
But in each with each side, it gives like an early here are the things that are leading up to it, and then it just kind of tosses you in there. So there is no hand-holding with this game, which is a major disadvantage for it, because, there's not even, like, a simple tutorial of, like, here's how this works, this is what you do with this.
So it just kind of drops you in?
Yeah, and perhaps that's... perhaps that's also to go along with the theme of chaos and stuff like that. But I even if that is, I find it to be a fairly flimsy excuse, because even the game, there wasn't really a guide to explaining how anything worked. And more often than not, it felt like, if I was succeeding, it felt like pure luck.
Mm-hmm.
Which of course, you could also say, oh, maybe it's just commentary. Like, you can't plan for, all this kind of stuff to happen. But at the same time, when I'm losing, I don't understand why I'm losing. And it just, it's very frustrating. And the way it plays on the Xbox, I don't know if the Switch and PS4 versions are any better. But honestly, I feel like it really would have benefited from a mouse and a keyboard more so than a controller. It just, the controls just never felt right for it. And I do believe it is out on Steam as well. I think it was out on Steam before all the console versions.
Yeah, I believe it's coming out of early access on Steam.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. Honestly, I felt I would just have rather have played, because... early on you were like, oh, do you want Xbox or do you want Steam? And I was like, oh, yay, Xbox. I'll get achievements and all that other kind of stuff. Honestly, for gameplay-wise, I really felt like I should have gone for the Steam version. I felt like I probably would have had a better handle on how to actually play the game. And, it probably would have worked better. It's a weird title. It really is. Like, I feel like there's a lot of potential with it. And there's a lot of stuff that feels right for it, but there's also a lot of stuff that it just just doesn't work. I don't know. I wanted to like it. I really did.
Like, what do you do in the game? What is the gameplay?
Okay, so you're given the two sides. So you're either on the protester side or you're on the police side. And the protester side, you are given pretty much the point of each level is to quote unquote win. But of course, you know, the gameplay makes you examine, you know, is there really a winner? Is there, you know, are you actually winning if you have to resort to, you know, XYZ? So you can make your protesters just like sit there and lie down. You could have them like show off like what's going on on social media, or you can have them like start throwing rocks or Molotov cocktails and stuff like that at the police. Meanwhile, if you're choosing the police side, the police are far more orderly. There's actual like units that you could do. Like there is a shield unit, which, you know, will take up more hits from the protesters and stuff like that. There is like a type of unit that will take that will just shoot bullets and projectiles at the protesters. So it's just like, you know, do you send in the troops? Do you try to, you know, put up barriers and stuff like that? And it's just, there's no train, like, as I said before, like, there's no training whatsoever with either side. And so it's just like, when things are working, you don't know why they're working, but you're like, all right, cool. But at the same time, when it's losing, like, or when it seems like losing, you also don't know why you're losing, you know, and you don't know how to fix that. It's just, it's a big chaotic mumble, or like jumble, with everything. And when you're controlling it on an Xbox controller, you know, you use the A, B, X, Y buttons to, you know, perform various functions, but you have to stop and figure out, like, first off, like, what the game is trying to have you do, and then how to guide everyone else. So it's just, I don't know. Like,
it just seems like chaos.
Yeah, and I mean, like, I know that the that's part of the point of the game, but like, there
you
has
need,
to be
you need a little bit more control on the chaos.
Right, or at least a little guidance as to, like, you know, this is how this works. Even if there was a better guide, like, within the game itself to explain, like, this is what this button does, or, you know, even just a guide would have been helpful, but there's nothing. And I don't know whether that's a, you know, from the game makers, whether that's intentional, or whether it's just, you know, just bad game design on their part. I'm not exactly sure. And it's one of those things where it's just like, I'd like to see this be developed further. It's not a bad idea. It's just really frustrating with its execution of it.
Yeah.
And again, you know, you have to question, you know, were they doing this for art's sake, or was it done because this was just poorly implemented? And it's a weird game to toe this line. And it's a unique game for that. I haven't really ever seen a game where that's a possibility, you know? I mean, like, you know, I've played plenty of games that are frustrating, and of course you have those games where they're intentionally frustrating, like speedrun games, or, you know, games like Dark Souls, where, like, it's frustrating in that regard. This one, I don't want to say it revels in its chaos, but, like, it makes you expect it, and it makes you have to deal with it. I don't know. It's a weird one. I don't know. It's just like, I mean, to be honest, like my gut instinct would to be, and this is going to sound weird because usually it's like, would you tell people to buy it right away or no? I'd be like, wait for a Steam sale, buy it then. And then so you could try it. And then if you like it enough, then go off and buy it on the consoles. Hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I, honestly, I think too, you'd probably have a heck of an easier time playing the game with keyboard and mouse as well, which we're not going to see on any of the consoles. You know what I mean?
Well, Xbox does have support for keyboard and mouse. It just depends on whether or not the developer wants to implement it. Maybe they'll hear this and they'll look into bringing mouse and keyboard support to Xbox One.
True, which would honestly be very welcome for this game. So,
all right. Well, Jacob, it is always good having you on chat about this stuff. Do you have any final thoughts on the game?
On the game or just any final thoughts?
In general, whatever. This is your moment to say whatever the hell you want before I cut you off.
Yeah, I still need to review that Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego? We still need to make that happen.
Do we?
Yeah, well, I thought it would be funny. I mean, come on. I mean, the game, it came out in 80, like the version I've been playing is from 85, which means we'd be reviewing a 34-year-old video game for a company that has now changed hands like 5 times. And no longer exists as we know it.
True.
Plus, the Netflix show just came out.
And finally tonight, we're bringing in our good friend Chris Taylor. Chris, how's it going?
Going great. Just got my copy of Etrian Odyssey Nexus in the mail.
I didn't know that came out already.
I don't know. I actually didn't know the release date. I just know I pre-ordered it.
And it might have come out today, but I'm behind on my DS releases.
I think so, yeah. I haven't opened it up yet because I've been playing these games I'm supposed to review, but it seems like it doesn't come with a soundtrack this time, so...
Really?
Yeah, just a 32-page art book, which, you know, it's thicker than normal, but still.
Yeah, that's
weird.
I'll
find out and get back to you, but everybody's going to know by then anyway, so who knows?
Yeah, true. we'll just say it doesn't. But I think I saw on your Facebook page it came with a pin.
Yeah, it comes with a pin of a character I don't recognize, so it must be from that game.
Maybe.
So, we'll see. Either way, it's Etrian Odyssey, so I'm going to love it. I always love them. It's a little
I know what else you love.
Oh, yeah? What is that?
Kemco RPGs.
Heck yeah!
Look at me bringing out a segue.
Damn!
I'm trying and shit.
Yeah. Getting good.
Anyway, your first game to talk about this week is As Divine Hearts 2, developed by XCreate, published by Kemco, released January 24th on the Switch for $12.99. Picking up 2 years after the events of their first adventure, Zack and friends find themselves off on another quest, but this time to save the parallel world of Archelio. I don't know.
Yeah, there's no voice acting in the game, so you can just say whatever.
We'll go with Archelio, which is on the verge of being frozen in ice. Chris, tell us about it.
Okay, so As Divine Hearts 2 is the is a rare thing for Kemco RPGs, Kemco XCreate RPGs, when it comes to U.S. Publishing anyway. It's a direct sequel to an existing game. They don't normally do that. So... I had to go back to the original As Divine Hearts to kind of, you know, catch myself up on it. And, I don't remember if I actually reviewed As Divine Hearts through this podcast, but I have it. But I was like, well, I'm just going to get it on, I'm just going to get it on Switch because, I'm... Might as well have both games on that system. Plus, I didn't have it for a console. And then, lo and behold, it was on sale. I actually think it's still on sale. It's like $9 right now.
Nice.
Anywho's. So, As Divine Hearts was a few years ago. It wasn't, it's much older than my perennial favorite, which is Antiquia Lost, as far as like RPGs that use this set of graphics, kind of like an RPG Maker style type thing, as opposed to like Dragon Sinker, which is my favorite, but also a whole different thing. And they had not yet introduced a lot of innovations that I've come to get really used to when it comes to Kemco RPG. So, like, getting through that game, you know, I played about 10, 12 hours into that one and, you know, got really involved in the story and stuff. And, yeah, I was just like, wow, this is so, like, primitive. It's missing so much stuff, you know, versus Antiquia, which is my kind of my my go-to sort of game to compare, like, all the stuff I like in Kemco RPGs now versus what they used to have. And so I went in, you know, I got in there, got you know, got to know the characters, the story, there's some twists. Actually, it was a more story heavy game than I remembered, and more so than a lot of the games that they've come out with that I actually tend to prefer. So I was actually really excited to get into Antiquia Hearts 2 because it stars the exact
as
same
Divine Hearts 2.
As Divine Hearts 2. See?
not Antiquia Hearts 2.
I'm not going to pretend these games aren't so similar that I'm going to get them mixed up sometimes.
You just love Antiquia Lost that much that you can't get it off your mind.
Yeah, and they have As Divine Hearts 2, and then they have, like, another one. What's the other one? I'm gonna frustrate myself trying to remember. They have a lot of similarly named things. So in the sequel, we're back to, again, it's, you know, as they say, it's 2 years after the events of As Divine Hearts, where male protagonist Zach travels across multiple parallel worlds. Actually, this is a little bit of a Final Fantasy V style, like, you know, we're going to do things in this world, but now we're going to go to this world and do more things and, you know, find out mysteries about characters. Characters have mysteries in this game where you don't quite know what's going on. But he's rejoined by more or less all the characters from the prior game. So spoiler alert, everybody lives. but apparently As Divine Hearts, the original, goes off the rails a little bit because a lot of the stuff they try to explain and wrap up in As Divine Hearts 2 is somewhat bonkers. I'm not even going to get into it because here's the thing. I really, really, really recommend playing through the first game and knowing the story before getting into As Divine Hearts 2 because there's so much that they call back on. So they're like, oh, I see that you still do this quirk that you had in the previous thing, and then, you know, and then also it tells you about some of the tensions of all the characters. Basically, it's a male protagonist, and every other character in the game is female to some extent, and because we're dealing with, like, deities who don't really have gender, but, you know. Yeah. But this hero seems to have the power of making everyone just falls in love with him. So there's this constant, it's not even like a love triangle, it's like a love octahedron. It's just bizarre how much of a accidental ladies' man this guy is. And of course he's like this virginal teenager who's just like, oh, well, I don't want, you know, you've got the wrong idea, and, you know, all this stuff.
Gee, it's, willikers, I'm so young and pure.
Yeah. And, you know, 2 years later, nothing's changed. So we get into this adventure, and I instantly noticed that on top of being better written, this game is a lot funnier. Like, they've actually kind of gone the classic working designs route, you know, those old Vic Ireland Sega CD RPGs that threw in, like, a ton of 90s references into, like, Lunar and Vi. And, I think Albert Odyssey is one of the more famous ones. That's one I haven't played yet, though. But so this one actually makes references to things like climate change and the EPA. And, you know, there's, like, a lot of modern day jokes in the translation. And I can't say that it's as bad as a working designs thing, but sometimes you're just like, oh, groan. Stop reminding me of real life game. But they've also improved a lot of things. So, okay, you know, part of, you know, they basically wrote the first female character that you get is Estella, and she, it's just Stella, I think. And, you know, they're like the grown up in the same orphanage, but, you know, she's in love with him, but she has to hide it at all costs for no reason at all kind of thing. And, you know, every Kemco RPG character has a quirk. So hers is that she apparently whips this whip that she has, like, all over the place and, like, tries to hit people anytime she's in any way flustered. It's played for laughs, but it doesn't get any. And it's
so
weird,
too. She still does that in the sequel?
She still does that in the sequel, even though her actual weapon changed. So now she fights with this stick thing, like a kind of baton sort of deal. I'm not exactly sure what it was. But she still does the whip thing. But now, because of the influence of the newer games, you know, again, Antiquity Lost, Ferngate, whatever. Now every character, if you put them in the lead of the party, they have a special trick. So, like, hers is that she can get across chasms by whipping a post, you know, Secret of Mana style.
Mm.
So the whip comes into use, but yeah, it's just one of those things where it's like, you know, so that's a questionable improvement. However, there's a definite improvement in the other female character, Uriel, who's actually kind of my favorite. She, through plot elements of the first game that are explained very late in the game and are kind of spoilery, I won't say, but she considers Zack to basically be her idol and her love interest, and she's extremely bold about it.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so that's part of that whole thing. In the first game, she attacks with parasols, and there's no real reason for that. There's nothing in her character that suggests she's the kind of person who would fight with parasols. So in this game, they fixed it, and now she fights with chainsaws.
Oh, God.
And I'm like, yes, improvement. And yeah, so, and of course they brought back the heterochromic cat who is possessed by a deity, which is a lot of it's a driving point of the plot from, you know, hour one in the first game. And she's back. Actually, the original game, everybody assumed that the light deity was a he, but apparently it's she, and they changed that in the second game. Who's also joined by another deity possessing another being who replaces another character from that. So, yeah, the plot basically goes RPG style. You know, we have to go around these temples and do things and find out what's going on and, you know, find out the mysteries and all this stuff. But what I really liked about this game is that what they brought from the old game, you know, they basically brought everything from the old game and added in all the new stuff that you would see in a newer Kemco, like X-Create RPG. So the gambling system is back, which is great. Now it's like three different styles of gambling, which actually is pretty close to how Antiquia and Ferngate works. And they also brought back the whole planting a seed in a garden and wait 10 real world minutes to get fruit, and that fruit will, you know, increase your stats and all that stuff. Only this time, they give you 6 of them, and you have the option of changing them into 2 other things that have other, like, uses in the game that, you know, they actually get unlocked a little bit later. But, like, one's a shed that adds inventory slots, so you can be planting plants, or you can increase your inventory, and you can change them on the fly, too, so it's not, like, a permanent thing. So that's kind of nice. The trust system is back. That was in the original, where in cutscenes and stuff, you can choose to talk to your teammates if everybody's separated for a while. And depending on dialogue options, you can increase their trust in you, which in the first game, I never really understood where that functioned in the game besides storyline. But in this game, it actually does count, because those characters using their special skills when they're the lead of the party, their abilities increase as their trust in the main character increases. So, like, there's one character who can bust boulders, and if she trusts the hero more, she can bust bigger boulders. Nice. So that's the first time that's been utilized in a Kemco X-Create RPG that I've played that actually makes a lot of sense. And I'm, like, getting winded, like, explaining all the features.
It's everything that you loved from the first game with more good stuff.
Yeah, that's a good way to sort of summarize it. But, like, it gives you, like, rewards for things like taking enough steps. Like, even that's counted now. Or defeating a certain amount of enemies or using a certain move enough times. It also has the weapons eating other weapons to grow more powerful. feature that's mm-hmm. been popular among those. So that's really nice. Damn, it's just so much. And that's not even getting into like the combat and stuff. Like it, they now do a partner system where you have three main characters and then three other characters that stand directly behind them and add support to their moves or do like weaker attacks or something like that. And all of those characters can be switched around however you like. And thus you have like this ability to customize the fights in like so many different ways that I just didn't even like, it made me dizzy. Like I was trying to do all that stuff. Plus, you can now unlock monsters to act as these buddies in this system through items. And then you can increase their levels too. And it's just, God, man, there's so much in As Divine Hearts 2, but again, this is like the best Kemco X Create RPG that has come out yet. And still, I say that you should play the old ass other game that has hardly any features before you play this one.
Well, although it's a sequel, I will say, you kind of have to.
I will say they do one move that I actually really appreciated, and that is in the very first scene of the game before you even leave. You know, every Kemco X Create RPG starts with the hero standing in his room, right? Mm-hmm. And then you leave the house, and then you walk around. Like, I don't know why, but every single of those games start that way. In your room, the light deity drops off a diary of everything that happened in the first game, so you can actually read the events of the first game leading up to this one.
Oh, nice.
So you can actually spoil the entire first game using this game and then be somewhat caught up. But that's the reason I went back and played so much of the first game, is because I really wanted to get a foothold, you know, basically compare what they're saying in this diary to what actually happens in the game. And I still think that playing the first game is beneficial.
Yeah. Well, overall, $13 on As Divine Hearts 2. What do you think of it?
Well, I mean, technically I'm suggesting $27 because I'm telling people to buy the first game too. $27 not on sale. Like I said, right now it's $9. Might not be by the time this comes out. I didn't check the dates. Yes, go and get this. These are deceptively deep RPGs with like great mechanics and just a lot of fun. And man, they get you addicted and like keep you coming back. And this one, one last thing. This one has the first ever, from what I could tell, real callback to other Kemco RPGs that aren't related to this title. You can actually unlock, as a buddy, not as an actual fully playable character, but as a buddy, you can unlock a certain character from Alphadia, which is one of their first games.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. I like it. Although they tell me it's like a 5-star rarity item, and so you're going to be spending a lot of coins trying to gamble your way into that one. But I'm going to try it.
Oh, boy. I believe in you, Chris.
Yeah.
Anyway, next game to talk about is called Gabuchi, developed and published by Hand, H-A-N-D, released January 31st on the Switch for $7.99. This is kind of a long intro, but I wanted to read it direct off the Nintendo page because it is amazing.
Yeah, go ahead.
Gabuchi is a curious creature that loves gobbling blocks and stuff. His favorite food is the heart cookie. In order to get it, you have to think about which blocks he can and can't gobble. He can gobble blocks the same color as himself. You can change his color too, so he can gobble different colored blocks. The more Gabuchi eats, the more satisfied he gets, but if you make him eat too much, he won't be able to get to his heart cookie, so you have to think carefully about what blocks he should and shouldn't eat. I love it.
Yeah,
I think that covered the entire game, possibly.
Pretty much. My job here is going to be very brief, but I do have things to add. So, yes, Gabuchi is a level-based puzzle platformer. For the first part of the game, it doesn't have any enemies, but it actually eventually does. So this is a game, yes, where you control the little character, and everything is set up on a grid. So there's, you know, there's, of course, the walking area, the stuff you can walk on, and platforms and things like that. And then there are white squares, and then there are red squares with faces on them. And while Gabuchi is white, you can eat the white squares, but the red squares are solid. And then if you use the either shoulder button to turn Gabuchi into the red Gabuchi, he'll eat the red ones, and the white ones are solid. So the thing is that the end of the level is always out of your reach, so you have to selectively, you know, eat the certain colors in order to provide yourself with a platform to get to the end of the level. The trick here is, of course, that the game also, it gives you a bonus and considers the level, you know, you can move on if you beat a level, if you get the heart cookie at the end, of course, but in order to complete the level, you have to do it within certain parameters, and those two parameters, for the most part, are his fullness, which you get by eating as many blocks as completely possible without closing off the end of the level, and that's represented by Zelda hearts. I think it's like every two things that you eat. Maybe it's just divided evenly between stages, but yeah, there's also like floating cookies that you can grab too, that, you know, in either color, they just float around. They're like Mario coins. So it's basically that, and also sometimes the game will count the amount of times you switch colors, and you get an a bonus or a completion award based on how many times you've had to switch colors to get to the end of the puzzle. So if it says three, then you can only change colors three times, unless, you know, or else you forfeit that that completion bonus. And of course, the more completion bonuses you get, the more shiny, you know, this level's totally complete, gold star type of stuff, you know. And yeah, that's it. Just repeat like through all these levels. The puzzles are very clever. And the learning curve is nice. Like, basically, the first few levels are, like, stupid easy. And then, like, you get about 20, 30 levels in, and suddenly you're like, oh, my God, this is devious. So, you know, it's really good in that sense. The things that stood out to me on this game, one is the stage theme, and the title theme, actually, but mostly the stage theme. The music is adorable and wholesome. And the main melody is played by a recorder with squeaky notes. And so it sounds like a child or like, you know, a well-meaning amateur is playing the recorder in these songs. And it works so well. I was so delighted by the music. Like, I actually really hope it becomes available to purchase. I couldn't find anything on Google's. But yeah, it's just, it's delightful music. The other thing that I really like in this game is that you have a level editor. You can actually create your own levels. And once you do that, you know, I made a couple just to see what it's like. You realize that actually every level in the game is made with only 15 different things.
Oh, wow.
It's super easy to make. It just, you choose one of the 15 and drop it into the map, you know? And then nice. Through an option, you can play the level and then go back to the editor if you like. And, you know, you can mess with certain things. But yeah, you can just build like levels to your heart's content and save them. I don't think there's online sharing. I didn't really check. No. It didn't seem like that didn't jump out at me anyway. But I really like that about it. So yeah, Gabuchi.
Nice. So for $8 on it, what do you think?
Yeah, $8. This is really well put together. Again, I love the music. It plays really well, and it has to, because sometimes switching colors, like, within a split second is required to get through some of the levels. So it actually isn't, even though there's no timer in the game, like, you can get through the levels as slow as you like. And you, of course, you get infinite tries. There's still, you know, there's a lot of challenge here for, you know, people who enjoy slightly twitchier platform puzzles, but I like it because it's so nice and innocent. There's not all these, like, there are like spiky things, but it's not like the room's made of spikes and you're gonna get eviscerated if you mess up and you just have to watch your character explode into ketchup, you know, 1,000 times a minute. I really like that about it. And again, I was just ultra charmed by the music. So yeah, $8. This is one of the better ones of these I've played.
Nice. And I know the producer, Takahiro Suzuki, is most likely listening to this. He was contacting us to see if our review was ready or not. And here it is. It's ready. Is there anything that you want to say directly to them besides making the music available?
Yeah, make the music available to purchase. And great job, guys. I love this game.
Awesome. One final game to talk about tonight is called Pixel Colors, developed by Score Studios, published by Rainy Frog, released January 31st on the Switch for $12 even. Use the numbers around the sides of the puzzle to work out how many blocks of which color should be painted in each row and column. Since the order of the numbers doesn't determine the order you need to paint the colors, you'll need to stretch your brain to figure it out. Chris, tell us about it.
Okay. Pixel Colors. Well, I was excited to do this one because I got to do, I can't remember, Pixel Lines EX 500 more puzzles or something like that. Mm-hmm. Another Rainy Frog Pixel game. That's P-I-C-Z-L-E, like picture and puzzle portmanteau. And I really, really enjoyed that one because it was so easy to learn and I was able to breeze through the easy levels, like, you know, and before I knew it, I was actually able to play it expertly without even realizing I'd been challenged at any point. Suddenly the puzzles were way harder and I was able to navigate them. And I think that's great game design. This game is very similar to that. It is in a Picross style, which of course is a grid with numbers, you know, on the top and side. And you're supposed to determine, which blocks to fill in the grid in order to make a picture. And the twist that they add is, of course, there's different colors that you get to choose from. I haven't seen the really advanced puzzles because this one actually, for whatever reason, they lock the hard stuff behind, behind stage requirements. Mm-hmm. So you're only able to play so far before you have to actually play a lot of puzzles and, you know, unlock the next area. So, that's actually a little bit different in terms of these puzzle games. Usually all of them are available at all times, but, you know, that's okay.
It was to keep you from getting in too deep right off the bat.
Could be, because, man, if you know Picross, you know you can mess it up real bad.
Oh, God, yeah.
So, but here are the tools they give you to not do that. Again, they show you, the different numbers represent different colors and how many of each of those colors is on that line. And of course you have to add up like basically the lines, in order to get an accurate idea of what you need to do. The other element that this game adds, besides the different colors is that if the number is like basically circled, you know, it's written into some solid paint, you'll know it when you see it. Plus the game has an expansive tutorial, so, you know, they'll tell you this. If the number is circled, it means that those blocks are definitely all connected. And if it's not circled, it means that they are definitely not all connected. So, like, a 4 could be 3 in a row and then 1 elsewhere, but it can't be 4 in a row. But if the 4 is circled, it has to be 4 in a row. So, in a lot of the earlier puzzles, you might have like a circled amount that actually goes all the way across the puzzle, and then that can be your starting point. And then you definitely know that's one when you're working your way horizontally. And then, you know, you can kind of logically work it out from there. And it's a brain exercise. What I really like about this game is that they give you about like 20 puzzles that are so easy. You'll just get them done in like less than a minute, half a minute. And that gets you, but that gets you really used to the way that they operate so that by the time you get to the larger, you know, harder puzzles, you're not lost, which is really great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they, the other thing I really like is that the music's actually really good in this one too. Now I thought that about the last one, but this one, they kind of ramped it up a little bit more. It's a lot of groove oriented songs. Actually reminded me a little bit of Zarvat, which I was extremely fond of as far as the music goes. So, this is an excellent Picross, game. My only minor complaint is that, and I mentioned this when we covered the coloring book game, is that when you fill a line in with paint, it makes this terrible splooshy sound that you can turn off all sounds and get rid of that, but then you don't have any sounds besides the music. Which, you know, that's more or less the only sound you'll hear, but I'm just like, I'm starting to make a stand about these paint-based games making paint sound like, you know, an ASMR of somebody just like, nyeh, nyeh, nyeh. Sounds like a freaking NPR special. People talking way too close to the microphone. So please stop doing that, game developers, all of you.
Yes, please stop doing that.
Please stop.
So, Chris, it sounds like you really enjoyed the game. So for $12, what would you say?
I would say $12 is just fine.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a buy it. This is the most fun I've had with Picross so far. So I really enjoyed this one.
Nice. We got to keep the puzzle games coming to you.
Yeah. Especially from Rainy Frog. Good job, guys.
Awesome.
Say to them too, just in case they're listening. I don't know.
They might be. I don't know.
Someone might listen.
Nice callback.
Callback. Speaking of callbacks.
Anyway, that is it for this episode. Chris, thanks again for coming on and doing your thing. Thanks to everyone else who was on this episode, including Mustin. Check out that album when it comes out on the 14th. It is fantastic. You have to check it out. It is good stuff. Chris, you definitely have to check it out.
Oh, yeah.
It's new Mustin music.
Yeah, yeah. Always check out Mustin music. That's great.
So listen to this episode because 4 of the 8 songs are going to be played on this show.
Yes.
So, free preview. Yay. Chris, do you have any final words to end the show?
Thanks for listening, everybody.
And have yourself a wonderful night.
Thank you.